It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Theriot is here, and as usual, there's very little to talk about, but we're going to make it a really long show. No, I'm just kidding. He is going to talk about the new Beatles album, believe it or not. We'll also talk about why software is getting worse, not better, what's new in Microsoft 365, and are you ready for the Surface Duo Insiders program? That and a whole lot more coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Theriot, episode 805, recorded Wednesday, November 30th, 2022. Week E is a lie. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by IT Pro TV. Join a community of IT learners who access 5,800 plus hours of IT skills and training courses and interact with each other and subject matter experts to better themselves, their organizations, and their careers. Get 30% off when you sign up at itpro.tv/windows. Don't forget to use the code WW30 at checkout. And by MIMO Monitors and their award-winning small format displays, touchscreens, and tablets. And don't forget to try Unify Meeting for all your video conferencing needs. Visit unifymeeting.com and enter the code WW50 for 50% off a year's subscription. Or use the code WW and get 25% off any of MIMO's displays. Limited time offer. And by NordLayer. NordLayer is a secure network access solution for your business. Join more than 7,000 fully protected organizations by going to nordlayer.com/twit to get your first month free when purchasing an annual subscription. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft with Theriot from Theriot.com. Hello, Theriot.
I clicked my volume mic on my entire system paused for a moment.
Oh, dear. Never, ever click the volume icon.
I know what's going on.
What the heck? See, one of the things you do, Paul, which is, I think, troubling, to be honest.
I'm sure. Okay, only one thing?
Only one thing. But the one thing is you're always using a different computer for this show. Like, you don't have a dedicated computer because you're always trying out laptops. So every week, it's a new thing. What are you using today?
This one I've had for a few weeks now. It's an HP NV16.
Nice.
Yeah. It's got a GPU, lots of RAM. Should be great.
Just don't press the volume icon.
We're going to talk about this later today because this goes into my whole 12th gen Intel thing. I've been the lone voice in the wilderness about. But we'll get there. We will get there.
Uh-oh.
Yep.
First of all, I want to welcome you into the Tutorverse.
Mm-hmm.
You have finally.
Yeah, I know.
Signed up. And I forgot what
I missed a step like 2 weeks ago, and then I had to redo it.
And then you wrote, like, because what we're doing now with twit.social, our Mastodon instance, is saying you have to be a twit listener to do it. Of course, I recognized your name, so that wasn't a problem. But I think you wrote something that would normally have completely gotten you booted off.
Oh, what did I write?
I can't remember.
I wrote something?
I'll have to look and see. But your excuse, it's like, I have to, or something like
you
that.
You son of a bitch. No,
I can't remember. I can find out. I have the power to see what people wrote. I should mention, if anybody wants to be in Twit Social, it's a great place. Mm-hmm. We're really, I don't know if you've noticed yet, since you're so new, but it's a really completely friendly, nice, conversational area. But I, in order to keep it that way at minimum expense, you have to apply, right? And then when you do apply, you have to write a reason. You wrote the reason that I generally reject, which is I'm looking to move off of Twitter.
Right.
That's the one, you know, fine, move off Twitter, but not to Twit Social. That's for us.
I see.
So that's okay, because I did recognize the name.
Okay. Actually, I saw the... So because I had gone through this process a week or two earlier, I guess I didn't complete the final step. So
right. You got the email and all that.
And I thought, I'm already in. What's going on here? So I just did it again, and it seemed to go through.
Yeah. But
then I had to... You know, it said, look, you're going to be on a waiting list. And I thought, well, I don't know how often he looks at this, so I'll just...
I try to do it twice a day.
You know? Yeah. Right. But I don't, you know, I had no expectations.
No, no. Sometimes it's longer. Of late, I've been doing it twice a day because there's, you know, quite a few people. And I have to moderate. I'm aggressively moderating as we welcome all these new people in to make sure that we don't let in any bad apples. Somebody mentioned Hunter Biden's laptop, and that was like, boom, you're gone. Yeah, and then he said, what? Yeah. What did I do? And I said, there's plenty of places you can hang. Not here. So don't go in there and talk about Hunter Biden's laptop, okay?
I can guarantee.
okay. I figured you were safe on that. Yeah.
I'm not there for political stuff.
Nothing wrong with Hunter Biden's laptop, just not here. There's plenty of places like Twitter you can do that.
Oh, listen, my week has been a 3-week disaster of Elon Musk posts and then people who love him.
Oh, I know.
Showing up in comments, and it's like, guys, this is not the topic.
The thing that makes it fascinating, and of course, one of the things that's great about the Mastodon now, twit.social, is we've kind of gotten over that, so we've moved on, so there's not a lot of conversation like that. I can't say that for the shows yet. It's still newsworthy. Elon has now declared war on Apple. What could possibly go wrong? But I think people are missing the point of that now. And now I'm kind of, you know, really the real question is, what's going on? What's he thinking? What did he spend $44 billion of other people's money for to acquire Twitter? And I now think I understand, because he knows that it's not, he knows it's not politic to say, you know, Apple is against freedom of speech. And he deleted the tweet that said, I'm going to war with Apple. But nothing. He should know. He owns the thing. Nothing is ever deleted from Twitter. Tweet it once and it lives forever.
Tweet it once. Shame on me.
Exactly. Yes. Yep. I figured it out. I think this is all about political power. Because immediately Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, who is probably, you know, he's currently the front runner for the Republican nomination for 2024. Immediately jumped in and said, yes, Elon, you're right. We're going to go after Apple. We're going to start an investigation. I'm sure members of Congress will do the same. And now I understand what Elon's up to. This is it's a lot of money to pay.
Sure.
But I guess if you're a billionaire, it's nice to kind of, especially a billionaire that lives on government subsidies to some degree, it's nice to have the ear of Congress and the White House. And I suspect that that's his... Now I'm starting to think that's his motivation, which means, bottom line, Twitter's only going to get more political and more device, you know, more fight.
You know what? And I have to say thank God, because it wasn't too bad before. And seriously, are you kidding me? what was Twitter before? It's like
it's good for Twitter. This is what Twitter knew. This is what Jack Dorsey knew.
Yep.
Outrage is good for engagement. It's what every tech company knows. Outrage, good for engagement. And that's why it's kind of nice to be somewhere where there is no commercial interest. In fact, it's costing me money with no possible way of recouping. There's no commercial interest. It's just a public space. And the same thing with our forums. Your forums, I'm sure, is the same. Your comment section. This is the old-fashioned web where you had a blog and you'd post your ideas and you'd have a conversation and, you know, trolls.
My comments section is a disaster, but you can only do what you can do. We use open web. They have pretty good moderation capabilities.
I see the silliness in your comments, but that's also part of this. Somebody posted this too. Mm-hmm. The internet didn't suddenly get bad. It's always been,
you know what?
Remember the flame wars on Usenet? I mean, it's always been this way.
Yeah, right. I don't know if I want to go too far down this path. The internet has amplified the stupid, and people who are, in fact, a minority are seen as being a majority because they're so loud and they're always there, you know? And it's just, it's a little depressing just how much stupid there is in the world.
You worked at a bank. You know how much stupid there is in the world. Have you never dealt with the public before?
No. In the mid 1990s, I lived in Phoenix, and I went down to a flea market, and there was this, it was like a video game store, and they had stuff at a flea market. And they had all these classic video games, new, unopened in boxes. Atari 2600, Intellivision, ColecoVision stuff. It was all brand new. In fact, I had an Intellivision, so I knew that some of the things that they had, I had never seen in stores before when this stuff was new. And they were selling it for nothing, a couple of bucks a piece. So I started buying it. And I would sell it on, I guess it was Usenet, which I accessed through America Online because this was in the pre-broadband days, right? And what this did was it opened me up to an audience that was much bigger than what was available locally, which was a good thing, right? And people would buy these things for $25 a piece. It was an incredible business. And of course, the store that was selling me these for $1 to $2 figured it out because I kept buying more and more. And
how were they getting it? I mean, it sounds like it was hot merchandise.
Yeah. No, what they had done was they had bought at an auction, because I talked to the guy who owned the store, a supply of, it was literally boxes where you open the box, it was all the video games inside, of a store that had gone out of business in California in the 1980s. And I think this stuff had sat in a warehouse.
I used to go to that store.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was, anyway, the point of the story is there's a good side of the internet where it does open you up to this. You find people of a like mind who don't live near you. Right?
Yes, which is wonderful.
But it's also terrible because after a while, you only seek out those people and everyone else is an idiot. Everyone else is, you know, whatever.
That's a bad tendency. I agree.
Yeah. So I think what we're seeing is the dark side of that. And
so you're saying I should probably let people talk about, I should be less aggressively moderating our forums and our Mastodon, do you think?
No, I'm not saying that. Okay. I don't know what I'm saying. I guess it's hypocritical.
Here's our rule in the Twit Social is you can bring up controversial topics.
Yeah.
But it has to be civil discourse.
I just had this thought today. I was, you know, going back and forth in a comment section on my site with some guy, it doesn't matter who. And what I wanted to write was, can we just discuss this reasonably?
Yes.
You know, does it have to be so antagonistic?
Right.
You know, and my problem is if someone's being antagonistic to me, I'll escalate it. I don't like to be talked to like that, you know, not because I'm anyone important, but I find it disrespectful. And but I'm also just disturbed by, this isn't too sides of an idea. This is like objective truth versus what you think is insane. And I have a hard time with it. I have a hard time with.
But this is the problem. We're in a post-truth era and we can't seem to agree on what's true.
What's true.
And that becomes hard because obvious, if people adamantly aver that the earth is flat.
Yeah.
The conversation sort of stops.
You must have seen the just the unbelievable photo, the selfie, you know, they called it, of Artemis out as far beyond the moon as any thing has gone and taking a picture back of the moon and the earth. And if that, aside from the fact that the earth is not flat, you know, I don't understand how that doesn't inspire you to love science.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
And space.
And if
space
you're, and this is always been my thought is if you love technology, you love science because technology is science applied. It's just the applied version of all the science. Without science, technology is witchcraft. So
which actually we'll talk about later in our troubleshooting section. But yes, it is.
There is some voodoo involved in troubleshooting. I do agree.
Well, we're going to talk about that because we'll talk. Actually, we're going to talk about it up front. It'll be one of the first topics too. But yeah, this is. You go into computers because knowing that everything is ones and zeros. And,
yeah, it's deterministic.
Software code should be perfect. Yeah. It should always work.
Yeah.
And I don't think software code ever works. And I think we need to figure that out. It's kind of an interesting problem.
Alex Stamos is going to join us next show on This Week in Google. He's, of course, a well-known, famous security guy. Was at Yahoo, then at Facebook, left over the Cambridge Analytica scandal. He was the person Zoom called when they were getting heat for not doing a good job of encryption. He's really widely respected. And this is going to be one of the things I want to talk about with him, which is we expect everything to be software now. Every company has to have a website, has to have an app. But there are a limited number of people who can do that competently.
All right, so this is going down a weird path.
And it costs money to do it. And I can't tell you how much crap software. This came up because our son, Michael, is now working a union job and he at a big grocery company. And neither the union's website nor the grocery company's website work at all. I mean, they're just broken in dumb ways. And I see this all the time. And I think it's because people are cheap. They don't want to pay for good. I mean, unfortunately, good engineering is very expensive these days. I know.
Yeah.
And so they don't want to pay for it. We shut down one of our sites, the Tech Eye site, because it would have cost $250,000 to update it.
Yikes.
Yeah. We're paying almost that much to update Twit because we used an old version of Drupal, which is now out of service or soon going to be out of service and a security problem. And it costs, you know, mid six figures to fix it. So, well, I guess low six figures. We negotiated it down. But this is expensive. I understand. But we've kind of put pressure on everybody has to be computerized, and yet we don't have the horses to do it properly, which means it's a world of crap.
Yeah, a world of crap. That's pretty much exactly what it is. I don't know. I don't even remember the exact context. It was something with a smart TV, probably. I remember someone talking about smart TVs and how you could, you know, and you can update it over the internet. You can have apps on it. I'm like, why would you want any of that stuff? What are you talking about? Have you ever used a computer? Why would you want something like that? We have this device that turns on instantly. And what you're saying is it's going to have a boot process. Software is going to be involved. It's going to connect to the internet. And then you're going to update it over time. Here's an idea. How about a screen that just turns on?
There you go. Nobody makes it.
I don't want that stuff. I don't understand. I feel like I'm not a Luddite. I'm surrounded by technology. It's my whole life in many ways. But, you know, you have to have some kind of a balance there too, right? I mean, get outside for crying out loud. I mean, go for a walk, you know, and maybe get your, but leave your ears open. There's sounds.
If you go for a walk, you know, at least one ear, put it in headphones so you can listen to the show. So please,
sure. Well, balance. I mean,
no,
sometimes
this is
listen
the challenge
to a show, sometimes.
For technologists. You know. And I often wonder this because a lot of what I've done in my entire career is talk about the next shiny thing everybody should buy.
I know.
And that's not good for the world.
You must have moments of doubt because I have the same problem, you know, where every once in a while it's like, look, I want my net influence here to be positive. And I, you know, it's my mother called one time and, you know, she was probably in her late 60s at the time. And she said, you know, I really want to figure out computers. Like, I really don't understand them. I said, Mom, listen, you've lived long enough. Don't do it. You have enough heartbreak in life. There, why would you? You've gotten along fine without computers. Don't.
I used to tell people that on the radio show all the time. It's okay at this point.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
But I want to know what everybody's doing and talking about.
Yeah,
it's just a world of pain. Now, meanwhile,
sure is.
We'd really. Yep. This is why we needed Mary Jo, because she would have slapped us around 10 minutes ago. We are waxing philosophical, but I think it's good. I think it's good.
Yeah, I do too.
This is you and I would have talks like this all the time in the past.
So just to finalize this thought, perhaps, you know, one of the things I've thought about a lot is before there was an internet, I was always into computers. So I had a Commodore 64 in the early 1980s, Amigas, you know, whatever. And I say this all the time, but I think back to these days, and I can't for the life of me remember what I was doing because none of it was online. Not really. There was some early BBS type stuff and that kind of thing, but you can't use a computer and not be online. I know that's not technically true, but I mean, most people associate the computer with what happens online, right? So if you unplug the internet and we're staring at your computer, I think a lot of people will be like, I guess I'm not using this thing today. And that's kind of weird, but I actually, my wife and I read newspapers in the morning, not paper form because it's, you know, the 21st century, but on devices. And we'll talk back and forth, like, you know, this headline or this, did you know what this word means? Because we're both writers and we're horrifically boring. And today I just went off on this thing. It was sort of like that, you know, I don't remember what we did. Like, I was trying to remember what life was like just in general. Like, we had, it wasn't just like I was into computers, like everything in life was not online, right? So like, some human being would bring a newspaper to our door. We had the paper delivered for a long time, like a really long time, even past the beginning of the internet. Like, these are things, I don't know that my kids or other, you know, anyone growing up today would even understand what this, it would look like. It's like seeing a picture of colonial days and be like, yeah, those are people and everything, but they're walking around with horses and there's no electricity. I don't understand this world. And I feel like the internet has been such a huge change. It makes the first half of my life or whatever feel like that, you know, like olden days, you know?
Yeah.
I can hardly remember it. Sorry to keep going on it, but
I remember the two old guys sitting on the porch.
So in sometime between 1990 and 1993, I was driving to work. I worked at a bank and the car in front of me was weaving all over the road.
Oh yeah.
And, I thought this guy was drunk. And so there was a point where you cross over the highway and there are now two lanes. You can go on the highway or cross over. And I was going to cross over. He was going to the right. So I pulled up next to him on purpose to take a good look at this guy, because if he was drunk, I was going to call the police. Eventually I'll follow him, I guess. I don't know what I was thinking, but you know, anyway, he was on a phone and no one was on a phone in 1990 and 1990, except unless you were a doctor maybe or something like that. So I guess he was a doctor, but this was my first experience with someone trying to talk and drive at the same time. And he was weaving over the line, the whole, like he could not drive.
Oh, not good.
And he was very clearly a professional. Like he was not he wasn't drunk. It was, you know, 7:30, 8:00 in the morning, but
a stroke or something.
He was just talking on the phone. That's all he was doing. And terrible. That was my first, I was like, wow, that's,
this is going to be a problem.
That's not something one should do.
Yes. Houston,
I didn't own a phone of my own.
No, that was a fancy
cellular phone for many years. You know?
Yeah.
Yep.
Saw the future. That was a future in a little droplet of.
So someone in the chat, B. Jones, says you were making pretty ASCII art pictures. Actually, one thing I was doing was making fractal drawings with my Amiga.
Really cool.
And the way you would do that is you would set it up and turn it on and then you would go to bed. And you wake up in the morning and it would just be finishing. And you'd have a fractal.
It was like watching paint dry.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It was sometimes it would be like a fractal landscape. That was the big thing. You could have trees and, you know, whatever.
And I last year started writing Sierpinski triangle code in Lisp. And you press a button and it draws as big a one as giant, forever.
Back in the day, that would have to render.
Now it's like, boom. So we're just stupid at speed now, really, is the difference. We've made it even faster.
I just, listen, we were given superpowers and we have used them for dumb.
And that's exactly, that's what you would have predicted.
Yeah, but it's still depressing. You know, you want to see things like the Artemis thing or something inspiring, something.
Well, it's both, Paul. Let's face it. It's both. And that's the good news. There is amazing, inspiring stuff being done. Mm-hmm. They just announced an Alzheimer's drug that's actually effective, which is mind-boggling. Right. So there is amazing stuff being done. Look, let's not forget, we have a vaccine that has saved us from a plague.
Yeah, we also live in a country where universal health care is not a right.
Yes, there's pros and cons.
We now have to
pay for the vaccine. We
bang
to
up job
free.
Fixing one problem, everybody. Yeah. Is cancer still a thing? Oh, it is? Well, how, Paul, are we paying for that? Oh, I'm paying for that?
This is the thing. You look at a glass, you say it's half empty.
No, Leo.
I look at a glass, story. I say it's half full. You know what happens, though? This. An engineer looks at the glass, he says it's poorly designed.
I look at the glass and I see a crack and I think to myself,
that's gonna leak.
When does the internal bleeding start? It's way worse than half empty. Yeah. There's a chip in the glass and I know it's inside me somewhere. And
let's talk about Windows 11. Yes. On that note, what's the latest, Mr. Thurrott?
Well, before getting to the actual news, of which there is little, I wanted to
discuss, by the way, just for people a little inside baseball, that's why I'm stalling.
Yeah, yeah.
We're filling the podcast.
Yes.
And you know what?
Sure.
We just did 24 minutes.
Sure.
Beautiful.
Solid content.
Solid.
We should charge for this.
We should.
Charge for this
service. We really should.
So, still listen to my insane rantings about nothing. So, I think it's worth kind of taking a step back and thinking about how Microsoft has presented the way they're going to update Windows going forward and maybe assess the reality of that situation, right? When Windows 10 first came out, although it was 7, 7.5 years ago. So they would have announced it about a little over 8 years ago. They introduced this concept of Windows as a service. And this was a way to get Windows on the train that was the rest of Microsoft, right? We know that this thing is a legacy software product, but let's see if we can't update it like an online service and keep it fresh. And there are so many things that have to happen for that to work. We want every version, we want every person or as many people as possible to be on the same version of Windows, which was a dream that was never realized and we now know will never be realized, because that will make it easier to deploy software patches, right? Rather than having to do them across many multiple versions, which, you know, as we've talked, is what actually happened. They also had to, just update the updating stack, right? You know, make it more modern. And that means lots of different things. We see this on mobile as well. You have apps that are updated through the store. You have this kind of monolithic thing that is the operating system that's updated through Windows Update. And those feature updates, you know, at the time were twice a year, kind of a big process. It's a version upgrade. But then in the interim, they've developed these other ways of updating the operating system and doing pieces of it at a time and doing it in non-dangerous ways, you know, allegedly or hopefully, where they can update more and more of the system as if it were an online service, you know, that kind of thing. So that was largely unsuccessful, I'd say, for most of Windows 10's active lifetime. But actually today, I think they've done a pretty good job with it. In fact, the way you can tell they've done a pretty good job with it is they've moved Windows to a once a year feature update cycle, which is okay, good. And they've said, well, you know, we're not going to interrupt you so much, which sounds great. But actually what they're going to do is deliver all these tiny updates, things that would have waited for the next feature update, like all the time, you know? And so when pressed on this, Microsoft has said, well, we're not going to do it that much. We don't know what the exact schedule is, but they'll be like maybe 2 times a year, maybe 3, you know, whatever. Windows 11 22H2 debuted in the beginning of October, and we have already seen two, and technically the beginning of, well, actually by the end of the year, I can say 3 of these updates. So just in the not quite 2 months, right, there will be 3 things that would qualify as what Microsoft calls internally a moment update, right? Little updates to Windows that just add kind of little improvements, right? The big one was the October/November update that added the missing features from 22H2. Tied into that was a surprise bonus feature, that right-click on the taskbar, get to task manager thing, which had never been announced and as a feature coming in that release. And so that was kind of neat. And we'll talk in a bit about a preview update that is a preview of a coming moment that some of the features will arrive in December as part of the normal Patch Tuesday. And some of them might kind of creep in over time. Like the code is in there for additional features. They're not enabled, but they can be very easily with a quick switch. And, you know, look, it's not a lot of time. I mean, as I say this, it's what, the very end of November. So, yeah, it's been about 2 months. I guess it will be 3 months by the end of the year. So in this very short period of time, they've actually updated Windows a lot. Not in major ways, right? But in minor ways, since 22H2 came out. That's kind of astonishing. And, you know, for the people who were freaking out over the really aggressive schedule of Windows 10 and then celebrated that they were stepping back from that cliff and only updating once a year with Windows 11, it's a little bit of a wake-up call, you know? It's really interesting because, you know, technically what they said was true. We're only going to have one feature update a year. Nice. Asterix, but we reserve the right to update Windows at any time. And as I wrote it, you know, when they, whatever they said that quote, I wrote, and they will. And because they have, like, that's, you know, like it's the whistle in Mexico City thing we talked about, you know, you don't give these guys a whistle not to blow it. We're going to blow the whistle. We're going to blow the whistle a lot. And that's kind of what they're doing with these moment updates. So with that as kind of a background, Microsoft yesterday released what this is also funny, kind of funny, because I have a stupid sense of humor, what would be called typically a week C update. Now, if you look at a calendar, you will discover that yesterday and this week is what we might call week E. You know, it's the mythical fourth week.
It's the last
week
of the month. Yeah. How does it be, right? C?
I don't know. So maybe I guess they missed the 15th.
Patch Tuesday is the second Tuesday. So
Patch
that
Tuesday
would
have been the
8th.
That's well, that's the week 15th. B. Actually, Patch Tuesday is week B.
Oh, so they do it by the calendar, not by their own.
Yeah, it's by the Tuesday, right? So the 8th was the second Tuesday of the month. That would have been Patch Tuesday. The 15th was just week C. Nothing happened. The 22nd was right before Thanksgiving. I guess we can understand why they wouldn't want to do this before a holiday. But for some reason, well, probably because they want to ship the non-preview version of this, they shipped what is normally, in fact, they describe it as a week C update. In what is
in week E.
Doesn't exist week E, which is not a thing. There's no such thing as week E, but
well, there is though. Some months there are five Tuesdays, aren't there?
I mean, in Microsoft's updating
in their world,
they don't talk about week E. There's no week E. So there's always an A, B, C, and technically there's a D, but there's nothing scheduled for week D. Week D is a week of rest.
So you're saying week E is a lie? Is that what you're saying?
Week E, it's like the 29th of February. It exists. It doesn't happen all the time, that's all. So this happened this happened late in the day yesterday. And I looked at, am I side-eye watching the Mexico versus Saudi Arabia game? No, I cannot stand soccer. I'm side-eyeing Discord. So,
which is probably joking about Windows Wiki.
Wiki.
Yeah. Wiki. Yeah.
So anyway.
Actually, you side-eyed the Discord asking you if you side-eye the game. Yes, that's crazy.
Oh, I couldn't.
You'd have to be. Yeah, let's not even start. Let's not even go to the disgrace that is FIFA.
They have an ethics committee. Did you know this?
That must be a really frustrating job.
That's so good.
No, you can't take that bribe.
It's the best.
I'm going to take that bribe. Best. But you can't. Here, have some of this bribe. Okay.
The FIFA ethics committee. It's like defined oxymoron.
Yeah.
FIFA ethics, committee.
Right,
it's beautiful. Anyway, sorry. So anyway, yesterday Microsoft released, this is how the official name is, the November 2022 non-security preview release, right? So it's a preview release. It appears in Windows Update. You have to go to Windows Update. You have to click it to get it. And if you install this, what you're getting is a preview of what everyone's going to see in December on Patch Tuesday, whatever the second Tuesday of December is. It looks like it's the 14th, which is actually pretty late in the month. Actually, it's as late in the month as it could be. In fact, December, they have, 4 weeks. So, whatever. They also said, look, this is going to be...
This is another thing that happens when you get over 50. You start doing calendar math.
Well, listen, we're going to do a lot of math today. I get some Call of Duty math.
Uh-oh.
So, yeah. So, I do a lot of math. And I'm terrible at math, so it's usually comical. They also said this will be the last preview for non-security updates for Windows 10 and Windows 11 of the year. So there won't be any of these previews in December for January, which might be a good sign for January. It might mean we're not getting any little hidden, sneaked in moments or whatever. So there are three new features that for users, there's actually a fourth feature for IT, but let's just say there are three new features for users in this preview release. So we know that these three new features will go public in December for everybody. But like I said, there's actually some other features that are hidden in this release that if you use a Vive tool, which is a software product somebody wrote for this purpose, is to take, if you type in the right code, you can expose features that are hidden in Windows 11. There are actually a couple of additional features. So it's possible that those will arrive publicly in December on Patch Tuesday, or maybe they'll come out over time like so many things do. Most of them are not particularly interesting, but the one that is kind of obvious that anyone will see is they've integrated Windows Spotlight into the theme section in personalization settings. So if you open settings, go to personalization.
That's nice. That's a nice.
Yeah,
thing.
It is nice. Yeah. It was a little hidden before. You could in fact use the Windows Spotlight as a theme of sorts. Now it's listed with the themes and it's right there. You can see it. It's nice. The other two things to me are very much related, and one of them is so misworded you can't actually tell what it means. But basically, further OneDrive integration into the system where you get storage alerts if you're close to your storage limit in OneDrive. And then if you're paying for OneDrive subscriptions, which could probably happen in two different ways, there's a paid, I think it's a 100 gig or maybe a 200 gig subscription you can pay for. I think that's about it. Or you can get Microsoft 365 Personal or Family, right, and get the additional terabyte. you'll see the total if you have multiple subscriptions. So I guess I think what they're trying to say is previously it would only show one of the two, but if you had both, in other words, you were paying for Microsoft 365 plus you were paying for a OneDrive subscription, it would only show one of them. So I guess it's going to show both. It's worded so poorly, I can't
understand what they're trying to say.
Right. It fixes some bugs. There's some two semi-important ones. One is there was a bug with a lot of modern apps you'd double-click on, but they wouldn't run, which is hilarious. And the other one was that gaming performance problem that I think we talked about earlier, where there was something about Windows 11 that just made games run slower, and they fixed that. So you don't have to, you can uninstall Windows 10 and come running back to Windows 11. Everything's fixed. So this is just kind of interesting because we just had 2022 in October. We just had the November update, for lack of a better term, in November. And now in December, we're going to get this thing, which doesn't really have a name. It has a KB. It will have a different KB in December, but there's a KB article associated with it. And they're going to add 3 to 4 new features in this thing. Actually, it's possibly as many as 6, depending on what they enable. And this has all happened in just the last 3 months of the year. Nothing, you know, revolutionary or whatever, but this thing is not something that is set in stone. And, you know, look, maybe this is just a me problem, but I'm writing a book about this damn thing. And I have to say, the rate at which they're updating, it could make this very difficult for me, depending on what they do. So the Windows Spotlight issue sometime in the next 3 weeks, 2 weeks, I guess, 2 weeks, I'm going to have to go switch up a couple screenshots and maybe alter some text. That's not a big deal. It's not a big deal. The OneDrive thing, I don't think I need to worry about that. But, you know, there might be changes coming that will require bigger changes for me. And actually, we'll get to that in a minute. Looking further down the road with, moment updates. So, you know, we have talked about how the Windows Insider dev and beta channels no longer represent actual versions of Windows. And I think this moment thing kind of helps explain it.
Wait a minute.
Doesn't make it.
What?
Well, in other words, back in the day, if you were testing like on the beta channel,
yeah,
you were testing the next version of Windows,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
If you were testing the dev channel,
whatever they throw down, throw at you.
It's a little closer to release. Like dev channel, we may or may not put this in Windows. Beta channel, we're probably going to put it in Windows. If it makes it to release preview, yeah, it's coming to Windows. You know, so.
So this is critical. This changes what it means to be a beta tester.
That's right.
Right?
This is something I've really struggled with because I like things to be a little more concrete than this. But I will say, when you think about it in terms of these moment releases, where everything is just a rolling set of updates that may or may not happen at whatever time, I don't mean to say this makes sense. I want to be clear about this. This makes no sense, but it makes more sense if what you're doing is having a rolling series of updates, right? Moments. So in other words, there's some set of features they want to add over time. They're plugging them into hopefully the dev channel first. By the way, they don't always, but let's not get bogged down in that. They test it with a certain group. They move it to the beta channel. The beta channel is where they have the A-B type testing, where some people get the new features, some don't. This has to do with enablement packages and testing this process where they can deliver the update to a computer, but not display it in the UI and then flip a switch and have it come on later. That's what they're really testing there. They're really testing moments. That's what this really is.
But has it always been the case that if you're on the Insider Ring, you're there to trial new features and to kind of give them feedback, like going to a sneak preview of a movie before it's done?
Yeah.
Or are you there to bug test what will be released to make sure it's rock solid when it comes out? I feel like it used to be the latter, but maybe I'm wrong. Was it always about testing?
Most people would tell you that changing a contract after it's signed is illegal. So I guess what I would say is for most people who signed up to the Windows Insider program, the system has changed. It's not what it was when they probably signed up, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's okay if they describe it accurately. I don't feel that they've described it well, but they're kind of stepping toward what this thing I just said, which is it used to be that each channel was tied to a specific version of Windows.
Right.
Over time, that changed so that, well, two of them are tied to a specific version of Windows. And now really only one of them is
tied
to a specific
version. It feels messy
and actually,
now.
It is messy. So at some point, there'll be some testing. Well, I can't even get into this. There'll be a 23H2 at some point, right?
Yeah.
Is there going to be a channel or, you know, that is that thing? No, that's not how they do things. They have these three channels. They're in different phases with regards to some new features. Some are closer to release, some aren't. Some will come before that release, some will come with that release, some will come after that release. It's what happened with 22H2. I'm sure it's going to happen with 23H2, but I think the big difference between this year and last year is that last year we only had one or two minor kind of moment type updates. There was the one they really promoted, but I think it was back in February, which actually wasn't that big of a deal, but whatever. I think this year, just based on the past 2 months and what's coming in December, I think we're going to see more of it. I think there's going to be a lot more of it.
So
it might help to make the Windows Insider program make sense, I guess.
It doesn't. I understand why there are people at Microsoft say, well, we're thinking about this feature. Let's, instead of having a focus group, let's just throw it out to the insiders and see how they use it, because they get telemetry, right, about what you click on, how you use it. I understand why they'd want that data. But I would argue that the most important role of the Insider program is beta testing features that are going to come out to make sure they're rock solid before they come out. And I do feel like of late, Microsoft hasn't done a great job in that regard. So maybe that's a mistake to do the feature testing.
Maybe somebody actually knows this, right? There should be a list somewhere based through the feedback hub of what are the most upvoted, you know, feature requests kind of thing. You can make a list. Here are the top 10 feature requests for Windows 10, 11. Does that in any way map to the changes they're making in the actual product, right? No, it doesn't. So, I mean, but someone could check on that. My assertion is that it doesn't, but whatever. I don't really think, and this is the problem. I think people who go into the Insider program do so with the intention of helping to make the product better and having some influence over that, whatever that might be. And being part of this thing where I'm testing a pre-release version of Windows and I like doing that, you know, then that's fine. And I unfortunately, I feel like the program has changed so much that there are people who latched onto the beta channel because that's what they wanted, the next version of Windows. And now there's some percentage of them that aren't even getting the new features. And it's like, that's why I'm here, you know? And it's like, well, we need you to test this other thing. It's like, that's fine. But that's not what I agreed to test. You told me I was going to do this thing, but now I'm doing this other thing. So over time, this will probably become less problematic because time will go by and people will just kind of understand what's happening. And but there are people like you, like we keep talking about this, you're kind of stuck in the beta channel and you've checked the box. I want to disenroll this thing whenever this version of Windows comes out. This version of Windows is never coming out. So there's that, you know, and they're silent on this issue, right? There are probably ways to get out of this thing without destroying everything on the computer or whatever, but this is something I feel like is their responsibility, Microsoft's or the Insider programs, to explain what's happening and say, look, we know some of you are here for 2 weeks or something. We're going to give you a way out or something. You know, I'm surprised this has never happened. So that's a troubling aspect of it, but okay, move past that, whatever. Not every week, but almost every week we get new builds in dev and beta. There are often new features. We just got one this week. It was probably last week, actually. It was yesterday. Sorry. And they're testing all kinds of, you know, they're testing all kinds of things. And so these are features that may appear in a future moment. I think as these features move into the beta channel and then release preview, they become more certain. I can tell you that, you know, one of them is pretty innocuous. It's a little VPN overlay on the network icon in the system tray to indicate when you are protected by a VPN, right? No big deal. This is a common sense addition. This is probably something that existed in previous versions of Windows. If so, it's missing because this is a new tab. Okay, that's fine. But the thing is, like, they're also testing different designs for the search box in the taskbar. And this is where I feel like we're losing the script a little bit here, because there's already several ways to access search in Windows. I don't feel that it's a hidden feature that people can't find. There's a magnifying glass right in the taskbar. Some people are now seeing a search pill thing we talked about, and we're actually going to talk about it again. They're talking about bringing a search box back, like in Windows 10. That search box would have that search highlights little graphic, which is whatever. You know, I don't need that, but I don't know. It's a little bit of color, I guess. And then you have all the other ways to access this thing, right? The keyboard shortcuts, the link in the start menu, et cetera. So this is the disconnect. This is not what anyone should be working on, right? And I don't mean to fall into a trap like the guys working on search could be fixing this other thing that I think is important. I realize not everyone works on the same team and has the same expertise or whatever, but putting effort into this part of Windows 11 shows a huge disconnect between what people are really doing and what a real need is and what they're doing. And I just don't understand why they would waste time on that, but they are. So there you go.
There you have it.
But here's the thing. Not done. Because that reminds me of what's happening out in stable. So we have this Windows Insider program, which we can agree or disagree on how it's done. And some people may like it, I guess. I don't know. Whatever.
And obviously, they get to do what they want, right?
Yep. And I'll make the case, given that we are, look, I don't like it, but given that we're going to have these moment updates, which might be every month, every quarter, whatever it is. Yeah, okay, this system makes a little bit of sense. The features will pass through each of the three channels like a piece of meat going through your colon or whatever. And fine, and then maybe it appears in stable. But the thing is, there are huge inconsistencies in stable, which I'm using this name. That's not what anyone calls it. But the version of Windows 11 that's out in the world, right? So when my wife is using her computer, my daughter, my brother, whatever, they're using Windows 11, right? I think they're all on 22H2, but we could all be on the same build number, literally. Like, in fact, it's 22.621. Oh, it's 900 now. Well, it's 900 because I updated with the preview update. So most people, I think, are on like 891, 892, something like that. When you're on this build today, here at the very end of November, you should have all of the features that are in 22H2, right? Including those November update features, right? So when you right click on the taskbar, you should see Task Manager as an option. Across my PCs, most have that task manager, but some do not. This PC did not until I installed that preview update I've been talking about.
So weird.
Now, when I right-click it, task manager is there. This has not been there before. So this only happened because I installed something. It's like it shook something loose in there. I don't know. But the more troubling one to me is this search box thing, right? We talked about this.
Yes, yes.
Most of my computers have the icon. That's it. Just the magnifying glass and the mouse over capability. Actually, I should check it here because that changed. Let's see if this changed. When you mouse over the icon, if you have the original icon, right?
You get something very useful.
Yeah, you get a little flyover, a flyout, or whatever you want to call it. And I'm sorry.
With your search history.
No, I got the pill. I got the pill here. So
You got the pill.
To date, I would say if of any given 10 computers I might use, 7 of them had have the little icon, and 3 of them had this, what I'm going to call the search pill, which, by the way, according to this post from yesterday, they're still testing in the dev channel, but it's out in the world. They never said it was coming. They never announced it. They never said we're shipping this. It's it doesn't work. It doesn't have the flyout.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you click on it and search comes up and that's fine.
Yeah, but I love the flyout because it's recent searches and it makes it
quick, of course,
to go where I want to go.
Right. Now, look, if we're going to do this, if we're going to play this game with search, right, which I think is a waste of resources and time, but whatever. If we are going to do this, here's the thing. Have a control in settings that says you can have an icon.
Right.
You can have the pill thing. You can have a search box. Make it their choice. You could have, if you have the search box, you can have search highlights or not, the little graphic that appears in it, right? Just give it all the options. I don't care. Just do that. But it is very strange to me that I see inconsistent results on stable versions of Windows 11. These are on PCs that have never been anywhere near the Insider program. This is troubling. And actually, I will say, just for the purposes of me writing a book, the fact that they're still working on this, right? They're not sure where they want to go with this. Means, imagine they did the search pill thing. I'm like, oh, I guess I'm going to have to change all the screenshots in the book that have a picture of the taskbar.
See, that's why it really bothers you.
No, but that would be one thing, right?
Yeah.
We've redesigned the search box. You know, I talked in the past about how there have been three designs, visual designs,
yeah.
layouts of the File Explorer application in Windows 11 since it first came out. When I wrote the book, and I started this back in July, when I actually started taking shots, I had a pre-release version of the thing that was going to be 22H2, and I went with the third one, right? Knowing that if some people got the book early and had like the initial release of 20H2, File Explorer would look different. But knowing that it would eventually look like the thing that was in the book, which is what happened, by the way, right? So I got that one right. But imagine if it's like, you know, so here it is, it's November. I'm like, man, I guess they're changing to the search pill. I better go fix all the screenshots. I could waste a week doing this, right?
Yeah.
I have to fix this but in then, every screenshot
and then
in the
of
book.
Of course, you know, they'll change it back.
They're going to change it again. That's the thing. The fact that they don't know
yeah.
which one they're going to, they literally.
They're A-B testing yep. though, right? I mean, right?
They've never said that they're doing
yeah.
this. That's
we don't know
killer.
What they're doing.
Like, yeah, they've never explained it. So it looks like they're up in the air about search. So I'm going to pray to God this becomes an option that people can select, not just because it will make my life easier. It's not just about me, but literally because if you care about this feature, I just turn it off. I don't want this thing. But if you care about it as a user, what you should want is the choice. For you, you have these different experiences. That's fine. Just let me have the choice. But what we have now is a system.
There's a risk.
What's going on?
There's a risk to that because you don't want to add so many settings that it becomes, yeah. you know, a dense pop, you know, like a bramble
okay.
bush.
Except here's the thing. In Windows 10, those settings all exist. Everything yeah. I just described.
Okay.
You can have
they're already there.
This is a regression from Windows 10. Right. And it's a regression because, like I said, the taskbar in Windows 11 at the time was brand new. It was not based on the old code. You know, the Windows 10 taskbar had kind of I'll call it a WinUI kind of look and feel, but the code had been there for a while. Like there's this ancient stuff built into it related, you know, the things like toolbars and all the different things you could do with the taskbar back in the day. The Windows 11 taskbar is unencumbered by that stuff, which is fun in a way, but it's, you know, for people who are used to those features, it's a regression, you know, that could be a problem. So
yeah.
That's
so
the world.
The negative on it is it takes up more space and it doesn't have that search history pop-up feature.
Right. The search bar.
From Microsoft's point of view, and I'm sure that mm-hmm. what they're doing is testing and looking at the telemetry, they're hoping right. more people will click on it now because it says search.
That's exactly right.
And they want people to click on it because there's some advertising in it. You know, I get my Bing rewards points. And
that's right. Yeah, the one thing I would personally never use a search button in an operating system to do a web search, but that is one of its functions. And no matter what you set as your default browser or its default search engine,
it's Edge.
Those searches yep. will go through Edge and yep. will use Microsoft's Bing and will be promoting yeah. their advertising.
That's what it's really. Yep. That's really what it's all
of
about.
Of course,
yeah.
Which is its own form of terribleness because this is not done to make the experience better for users. It's done to make it more lucrative for Microsoft.
They may say, well, but people like you are going to hit the mm-hmm. Windows key and start typing. You're never going to use mm-hmm. that. So right. this is for the naive user.
If this works, they'll probably turn what you just described off, right? Because they don't yeah. want me doing that. They want me hitting this thing.
That
you know?
Would make me really mad. Although
yeah,
there
so
are
we'll
third-party
see.
Tools that do it. But that really... Power users live on that feature.
Right. I made that up, right? So I'm not saying that's
that.
Happening.
I hope.
Well, but you could picture them, well, we'll disable it by default, and yeah. then you have to turn it on.
Right.
And it's not one of those settings that's
it confuses
honestly,
people.
They don't,
people accidentally
they don't,
hit yeah. it, and things pop up, and they don't know what to do. So we're just going to put a nice pill
right.
on the taskbar
yep.
that everybody knows what it does.
I mean, if you're OCD enough like I am, they got to this point where taskbar is centered, but not really because there's like all the system tray stuff. And now you're going to introduce one icon that's a different width than the other icons. What are you doing?
It's
like
true. That's the real problem.
That makes me insane. But that's, you know, whatever. Like I said, I don't care that other people want it or even that Microsoft would make it the default as long as I could change it.
You can turn it off, right? I mean, let's face it. You're
you can
not
turn it
stuck
off.
With it.
You can turn it off.
You can
yeah,
turn it
yeah,
off.
Yeah. So I'm not in the, I don't have a, well, I, No, that's not true. I haven't updated my one dev channel PC, so I haven't looked at this thing. Someone is saying that there are controls in there for something, for whatever.
Well, you can turn. I'm looking at personalization in the taskbar. You can turn it off along with task view widgets.
You can turn it off,
chat.
Right? But you know, if you had Windows 10, what you would see is that you could also decide what it looks like.
Yeah, I don't.
Right.
I don't see that.
No, there's nothing because this is brand new. There's nothing like that.
Right.
Nothing.
Maybe someday that'll be there.
On or off. That's what you get. It's simple. Which, by the way, a part of me appreciates. I like the simplicity thing. You know, minimalism, whatever.
Yeah. But did you use the hover over the search thing ever? I mean, is that something you're legitimately missing?
No, because I turned it off. I turned it off.
Right. Yeah, I just turned it off.
No, but this is not for me. I don't just think about me. I mean, I'm supporting people who read what I write.
But ultimately, we have to look at our behavior as to understand how people use it. It's hard to see into the souls of other people.
Well, what I try to tell people is like, look, if you're not going to use this stuff, turn it off.
Turn it off.
If you are going to use it, depending on what it is, still turn it off because you can save space on the taskbar for application icons and you could still get to this stuff with a keyboard shortcut, right? We talked about the example of, this one's a good example too. So with the search box, search pill, whatever it is, or search button, that little flyout is kind of nice, I guess, because you could mouse over it, select the thing. You want to go back to the same search. It's a little quicker, right? Mm-hmm. That's nice. Mm-hmm. So if you do that kind of thing a lot, leave it on, you know? Or the big one is the task view button, right? Because if you use the desktops feature, which is virtual desktops, that comes out with a mouse over interface, which is really nice. So even if you don't use task view per se, if you do use desktops, leave the button there because that's a really quick way to access that stuff. Otherwise, you have to Windows key plus tab to open that environment, and then you get your desktop interface. Like, it's nice to just have it there, you know?
Yeah.
It depends. It depends on your needs. So you just want to, my deal is I have to kind of figure out all the angles and what, you know, if you want this, do this. If you want this, do this. The problem is the way it is right now, I don't know what you're going to see on your taskbar. It depends, you know? We could be on the same build and you see a start pill, and I see an icon. I don't know. I don't know why. Magic. This is the magic thing. This is ones and zeros. Did they release that by mistake? By the way, think of the implications to this. There's only two ways this could have happened, right? They're secretly A/B testing out in public, which I think we can all agree is not cool.
Yeah, this is not just insider people. So others are.
That's evil.
Yeah,
that's evil. Is what that is. Yeah. It's evil. It's
you
not right.
Do that. Yeah.
Or it's a mistake, in which case they're inept. So which do you want it to be? Like which is better?
It's like when I got pulled over by a cop who said, you're either dumb or reckless. which is it?
Yeah, your choice.
Your choice. Like,
okay. I will take dumb for 100, Your
dumb,
Honor.
Dumb, Your Honor. I think that's probably what I said.
Of course. What else you can? I mean, what can you do?
I'm dumb, Your Honor. He was in a bad mood. It was all I had done is pull up and drop off my daughter at elementary school, and lights flashing. Sure.
But you had to do like a Tokyo drift into the parking spot
just
to prove you.
Yeah,
cool.
I like to do a little, you know, just announce our arrival. Hey, let's take a little break and more to come. More of this fine chatter to come. We still have much more to talk about, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. But I do want to mention. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by IT Pro TV, because I love these guys and gals. I love what they do. And I feel, honestly, a little responsible for IT Pro TV. It all started back in 2013. I was doing an NAB panel. Adam Carolla was there. A bunch of podcasters talking about video podcasting. And in the audience, Tim Broom and Don Pezet, who were at the time IT trainers in a traditional classroom setting, and a light bulb went off, bing, over their head, and IT Pro TV was born. They are taking the best IT trainers in the world and doing the best IT training you can imagine. And if you like a classroom, you know, real-time environment, they do it live, just like we do. There's a chat room, just like we have, so you can interact. But then everything they record is within 24 hours moved to the library. So they always have up-to-date content on every area of IT training. Whether you're new to IT, you know, you want to get that first job, whether you're just an enthusiast who wants to learn this stuff, or you're a professional already in the biz trying to recertify, get new skills, get a better job, IT training at IT Pro TV is the best. It can change your life. They offer virtual learning solutions that work for everyone. The videos cover every vendor, every skill you need to advance your IT career, even if you're just getting started or you're a very advanced professional. Because they're in a talk show format, you know, it's entertaining, it's engaging. But I have to say, I really give them credit for bringing in the best trainers. These are people working professionals. They're not, it's not academic. They are in the field doing this stuff every day. So when they teach you, they're communicating real world experience. Even more important, maybe, they have a passion. They love their work. And that passion communicates in two ways. One, it's catching. It's going to rub off on you. But also, because they're passionate and engaging, it's fun to watch. It's engaging content. They have 5,800 hours now of IT training. And it's all, as I said, always current because they're always adding daily. All the courses, they do a really smart thing. They divide the courses into 20 to 30 minute chunks. So it's never too much to absorb. You know, I recently learned that your brain can only absorb three new ideas at any given time. So that's why they chunk it up. So you get, okay, absorb it. They have ways that you can further absorb it. They have transcripts of every course. They have practice tests. So if you're going to be taking a certification exam, you can practice it first. Always a good idea. Practice it, see if you're ready for it, and also just get used to the format and all that stuff. They have virtual labs, which are a great way to take what you just learned and put it into practice. I think it's, you know, learning is, and they know this so well, they're really experts in learning, a multi-step process. You get it, absorb it, but then you have to put it out through the fingers, right, so that you know it. Those virtual labs are done in any browser. So you don't have to have a Windows machine even. You know, you can do a Windows server setup, configure it, configure clients, all that stuff. That really is one of the things that sets IT Pro TV apart. It's hands-on learning with their hosted virtual labs. And you get on-demand access to virtual machine environments so you can safely test all the skills you're learning. Again, in the eyes, out the fingers. In that process, you're really learning. I love that. Their online community is another great reason. And a lot of them are people who come from our shows. 220,000 active IT learners. That's a huge number. And when we've gone out there or I've talked to people or we talk to people in our audience, I know a lot of you already IT Pro TV community members. That's great. It's a great place to go. If you're getting into IT, you know, you join those forums, you engage with instructors, your classmates. It's another big part. Peer learning is huge. It's huge. And they've got it. You can learn wherever you want, whenever you want, on your computer, on your tablet, on your Roku, your Apple TV. Look, it'd be silly to pay tens of thousands of dollars for a technical college or university degree if you want to work in IT. Focus on the stuff you need to know that'll make you a better employee with an affordable certification-based training program at IT Pro TV. Tim Broom, one of the founders I just mentioned, is great. He says it best himself. We want to make life easier for people who want an IT career. And they do. They do. They've done so well in the 9 years, almost 10 now, since they started. We're just big fans. And I think if you are interested in this, if you're an IT professional, you want to get more skills, if you want to just join an IT community, there's a lot to be said for that. You'll get 30% off right now when you sign up at itpro.tv/windows, itpro.tv/windows. And please use the offer code WW30 for that 30% off. It's really important because then they know you saw it on Windows Weekly. 30% off, itpro.tv/windows, offer code WW30, IT Pro TV. Build or expand your IT career and enjoy the journey. There is no better way to learn this stuff than IT Pro TV. And we love partnering with them. In fact, we've got a big announcement coming up. We'll tell you all about it in just a little bit. But meanwhile, let's continue. With Windows Weekly and the now sated Paul Theroux. I don't know if you're sated. Did you have a nice Thanksgiving?
Yeah, it was great.
Did the you had Mark and Kelly were there and
yep.
I saw the pictures actually. It was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My wife cooks the turkey perfectly, so all of my family in the area is like, we're doing it at your house.
Yeah, we're coming over. You
know? Yeah.
We're coming over. We went to Lisa's sister's and we found out that just before we left that they have cut the cord. They don't have TV and they have no way to watch the football games.
Oh, so same with us. And so I thought ahead and went to my brother who uses some crazy Russian service for TV that costs nothing. I said, hey, can you bring over something for the TV? So he dropped off a Fire TV stick because I knew people are going to want to watch football.
Yeah.
You know,
I brought over, I love the Google, it's the new Chromecast with the Google TV in it. And it, you know, I always thought, well, I hope this works. I plugged it in. It knew all my accounts. It was ready. We joined the Wi-Fi. It was great. The picture was fantastic.
Right. Yeah.
Worked beautifully.
Thing. Yep.
So we got to
either that or it was going to be spend $85 or whatever on YouTube TV.
Well, unlike you, I don't use that Russian TV Fire Stick.
No, I don't either. This is my brother-in-law. I'm just saying, like, you know.
You must know, Odakta.
I have no TV. I mean, I have no
You don't have cable, huh? Wow.
No.
So, but you and you don't have YouTube TV or anything like that. You just don't watch it. Mm-hmm. You have music night. You read books. You sit by the fire.
We watch things on Netflix or whatever.
Yeah.
We do that kind of stuff.
You can stream. Yeah. I am rapidly getting there. I just saw a story that says cable TV lost 785,000 subscribers.
Every time I watch live TV, it reminds me why I don't have live TV. Yes. I cannot stand it. It's awful.
I agree.
I don't. It's crazy.
I'm with you. We have to cut the cord. We haven't done it yet. I think this is the year.
So much noise in life. You know, just cut as much of it out as you can.
Yep. On we go with the program. Let's see. Did you finish the whole Windows 11 thing?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. There's always more, I know. But so we can move on to Microsoft 365.
Yes, we can. Okay. Yeah, so I've talked in the past about how once a month Microsoft will come out with this end of month post and say, hey, this is what we added to Microsoft 365 this month. Most months, and I mean going back, you know, 5 years, whatever, this has been a disaster, like 10,000 words, you know, this crazy collection of stuff. This month, it was actually manageable. And we've talked about most of this. In fact, I bet we talked about all of this at one point or another, but I thought it might be interesting just to kind of recap this because there's some pretty good stuff. So most of it is Teams related, I would say. Actually, I'm not going to cover every single new feature, right? But the things I think that are kind of interesting. So if you're an education or enterprise customer of Teams, you've gotten a pilot version of Games for Work, which is a new Teams app, which is literally what it sounds like. Casual games like Solitaire, Minesweeper, things like that, built into Teams, which, you know, maybe I don't understand what work is all about, but that seems like kind of a weird thing to do. I don't know. I mean, I worked from home for 25 years.
That's so maybe the difference. I don't understand. Not worked in an office where really the whole game is to how little work can you do? And what other things can you do while you're there?
As you're about to discover, I play a lot of Call of Duty, but I also get a lot of writing done.
Yeah.
So,
well, you work for yourself. You don't have a choice, and you have to produce a product. I talked to my son. My son, for about a year, was in our sales department here at Twit.
Yeah.
And I had dinner with him last week, and he said, yeah, mostly it was a question of what to do for that 8 hours. Just sit there bored.
Yeah. This was part of the conversation. So, the thing I came to, because I've been working from home for so long, I very early on came to this notion that working from home in some ways was a little more honest because you weren't kind of dicking around about, you know, talking to people in our doorway.
There's a lot of wasted time in an office.
Yeah. So, but when you work from home, of course, you feel guilty at first, like, well, I'm spending time doing things like the laundry or a little bit of housework or whatever it is. Or I have to go on an errand or something. And but the truth is, I mean, at least for me, I mean, the type of job I have, the type of work I do, I mean, I sit here for hours and hours, and I work 7 days a week. I mean, in some ways,
you never stop. I mean, is there a quota? Like, do you feel like I have to file 4 stories today or anything like that?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean,
it's self-imposed, I'm sure.
Yep. I feel. Look, I mean, I can't let a day go by and not write something. this past weekend was odd because I didn't actually publish a lot to the site until the weekend was almost over. But I was writing the whole time. I was working on the book.
Yeah.
So the
oh,
work,
I know.
The work, the book is very time consuming.
You never get to stop. Yeah. Honestly, I'm the kind of guy that if I didn't have a show to do at 11 o'clock on Wednesday, right, I'd still be in bed right now. And in fact, you notice sometimes I get here 10 minutes late because I'm so slow at getting, I go, oh, I got to go to work.
Sure.
It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, I started the day earlier, but.
I should. I could.
Well, no, I know. I mean, whatever. No, everyone's different. Whatever.
I woke up this morning at 8:30. Pretty typical time for me because I thought there was an earthquake. Turned out it was just the cat deciding, hey, if he's going to stay in bed, I'm going to get in bed too.
Nice. Yeah. So the weird thing about being a writer is, you know, if you have some idea for like, I want to talk about this thing on a show. You can't get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and go talk about it. But if I have that thing, I can get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and write, you know.
Ah, good
point.
And
in fact, in some ways, it's kind of better to do that because you forget.
I wish I liked writing. I really do. It would be so much easier.
Well, you have to be antisocial for starters.
I am. But the problem, here's what happened to me. I got spoiled because I found out I can make a living just gassing.
Right.
And once you've made a living just going, it's hard to make a living in any real sense, you know. I've been spoiled.
No, you're ruined. Yeah,
I'm ruined. I don't have to type. I just talk. Talking's
I was
easy.
Joking. This, a million years ago, I was in Israel on a kind of a consultant type thing. And, you know, everyone gets up in the hotel and goes down and has breakfast. They head into the office. And so I did that. And the next morning, I was upstairs. I was getting ready. I was just about to come downstairs and the phone rang. And it was the boss, and she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, what do you mean? She goes, well, we're all getting ready to go to the office. I'm like, but I just went there yesterday. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Is there something new I should know about?
It's just a thing that when you go in every day. I mean, you're not paying me that much. Right? So I was kidding. I was heading down. But, you know, but that's, I don't know, you're ruined for this day-to-day thing. I could never commute. I would be in jail.
You know, you and I are lucky, and I hope that everybody listening is equally lucky. We have found something that fits our abilities.
Right.
That fits our sense of, you know, what we like and do. And we're very, very fortunate. There are plenty plenty of people who are, you know, have to go in and don't want to.
Right. Right.
And in fact, that's what I told Henry. I said, look, you don't have to, you know, he works harder than anybody I've ever seen. Being a TikTok celebrity is a never-ending conveyor belt of content, right? You just constantly. So he works really, really hard. It's not that he doesn't want to work.
It's a treadmill. It is a treadmill.
It's a treadmill. I mean, he loves it.
I wish I was good at music, right? Imagine you release an album or something.
Wouldn't that
and
be
it's
fun?
Just the gift that keeps on. It just makes money.
I get to play the song.
I write about technology that's out of date 2 days from now. And so I just have to keep going.
Yeah,
so.
We picked a bad field because there's no evergreen content in tech. It's not.
It's just, unless you like writing about Cyber Monday or whatever. Like, I mean, you pretty much can't.
Lisa asked me, she said, we're doing a gift guide this year, right? I said, no, under no circumstances are we doing a gift guide.
I used to get pushed to do that, and I refuse to do this anymore.
Never again. No. Nobody wants it.
No, and also, you know what? This goes back to the conversation we had earlier. I have this vague problem with this kind of thing because it's like, I don't think you need to stop spending so much money on stuff you don't actually need. Like
what we were talking about earlier. Yes.
Yeah, it's on sale, but seriously.
Look, here's a $40 shiny thing that'll be in the dump in a year. No.
Yeah.
Stop.
Right. Yeah.
All right.
Like cats chasing a light around a room, you know.
So here are two people who are particularly ill-suited for using Microsoft Teams talking.
Yep. Talking about
Microsoft Teams.
Of course. So let's move on to the next Teams feature, which is schedule send, right? This is classic schedule send. I try not to get in trouble here because we use Teams at work, but let's just say that some people could benefit from this kind of a thing, right? So it's Saturday. You have some brilliant burst of thought that you want to share with your team. Here's an idea. Don't send it on Saturday. Send it after 10 a.m. on Monday.
Perfect. So now you can.
Yeah. Be a good coworker. Now you can, right? So this is a feature that obviously it's been built into email. It's a great idea. It makes sense. So good. I think it was last week we talked about this notion of the sign language functionality in Teams. I misinterpreted what this was. So I should say, it's not an automatic sign language thing. It's not like captioning. So you're in a Teams meeting, you're hard of hearing or deaf, and you have an interpreter who's going to sign for you. What this is a sign language view so that you and the interpreter are always
simultaneous.
Up front.
Yeah.
Yeah, and big, you know, not, and the other people are smaller. So I apologize for that.
So it doesn't actually do sign. That would be, I mean, we're way off from that, well, right? There's nothing that honestly, can do that yet, is there?
I don't know about that. Why not? We can do live captioning. What, you're telling me we couldn't do a thing with hands, like a graphical hands doing the, I can't even, I don't know.
I mean, do you need it if you've got captioning or I guess it's more expressive. That's an interesting question.
That's actually a good question.
Ask Mark, because I mean,
right.
Everything now is captioned, even if your hearing is fine. We all watch captions on everything.
That is a great question. I don't know.
It is more expressive. I mean, I was watching a football game, and they had one of the cheerleaders doing sign of the national anthem, which I thought was interesting. I think it was on Thanksgiving. And a lot of it was like... waving her hands like the sky through the night, all the but it's much more, it's beautiful when you watch somebody who really does sign, doing interpretive signing through it in a concert, for instance.
Yep.
It's beautiful. It's like the singer.
Tell you, so my son goes to concerts. This is hilarious because he's deaf. So he has cochlear implants, so he can kind of hear. But because he has this disability, he just buys the cheapest ticket to the concert, and then he goes to the door and demands the disability service, which they have to provide.
So brilliant.
And they put him up front with an interpreter.
Sign language.
So he gets a front row seat to every concert, and then two songs in or whatever, he'll say, I don't need this. And he just come sit here and watch the concert.
Oh, they probably love it. They get it. That's why they're doing it, right?
That's beautiful. I mean, listen, it doesn't make up for being deaf or anything, but...
No. In fact, I don't begrudge him at all. Take it, you know...
Benefit you should get every... We went to London, the Tower Bridge, and with the kids when they were little, and, you know, two adults, two kids, and the woman said, well, he gets in free. And my wife and I looked at him, we were like, him? Like, yeah. Like, why? It's like, well, he has something with his ears, you know, because they look like he has hearing aids on. And I'm like, okay. I mean, I never would have even, like, whatever, if you say...
You mean Mark? You know, okay.
This kid?
This guy?
That little pain in the butt? Yeah.
You know, okay. I'm Prestige 11, you know. I mean...
Yeah. I mean, okay. No, whatever. That's fine. I mean,
awesome. That's great.
Yeah. Anyhow. Okay.
That's great.
So the final Microsoft 365 new feature, actually this is a new app, is that Microsoft Create site, right? And so this is Microsoft's attempt to get into that Adobe Creative Cloud, you know, field or whatever. So it's a place where you get, you know, templates and tips and things for social media or websites and all that kind of stuff. So makes sense. I mean, if you think about the traditional office apps, what they really are, what we would call these things today is like content creation apps. You know, I'm not sure I thought of that, of word processor or a spreadsheet or a presentation package, whatever, back in the day as content. But I guess everything's content now. So we're all content creators. And they have a site for that. So Microsoft Create is a thing. Create.microsoft.com. You can check it out yourself. That's cool. That's fine.
And that is our...
Yeah, that's the one thing that happened in
Microsoft 365.
It's been a short week.
That's okay. Yeah. No. Let's... now that Mary Jo is not here, you're going to have to buy the Surface Duo, by the way. When it comes to, they're going to do a Duo 3. They're going to do a Duo 3, aren't they?
They're waiting for now.
So when would they announce that normally?
You know what? I'm going to say, here's what I'm going to say. I think there will be a Duo 3. I think the Duo continues.
It's kind of a Duo.
I think they're going to do. leave the jokes to the professionals, Laporte.
I'm sorry.
No. Yeah, that's good. That was good. I would say, if anything, they're probably going to do more with Android, right? And I've speculated about something like a Surface Pro tablet that was based on Android. So they've clearly turned a corner with this thing where in the beginning it was about dual screen devices. I think they're shifting the emphasis a little bit more to this is a Microsoft 365 device. What does that look like? And one of the ways they can make it like that is to make it look more like Windows 11, use that kind of look and feel, which I think is
it is still Android, but it could look exactly like.
But what's the difference, right? I mean, Android is where they can make the most difference on a non-Microsoft operating system. They can't really do anything with the iPad or, you know, iOS, not anything dramatic. But they can really go in and make this thing look like they want it to look. They can customize their apps like Google wants them to do for big screen devices. So I think the next Android thing, it may not be called a Duo, but will be a bigger screen device. So
here's a question from IRC. This is from Sarah DeGuay. Mm-hmm. Do you think Microsoft would abandon the two screen thing and do a foldable?
Yeah, the two screen thing was always a holding pattern, right? I mean, the end game here is foldable, right? It's not a hinge, you know, with an empty space in the middle. You want foldable. So the dream for, well, I don't know that Microsoft can achieve this. I think there's a case to be made for a device that could be like a big phone and then a small tablet, right? I think if Apple ever figures this out and they have something that's an iPhone that kind of turns into an iPad mini, assuming they could ever get over the notion of not selling two devices, is a good idea, and they would probably get it right. I think Samsung is getting close to that with their bigger, it's like the Flip. I don't remember the names of their devices, but I think they're getting there. But the problem with this stuff is Android, right? So Android is still kind of struggling when it comes to bigger screens. That's been a big push of Google's. And I think when people hear that, they think Chromebook or tablets, but really it's also about these foldables and dual screen devices too, for sure. But I think a bigger device is what kind of makes sense. Like if you're going to position the Duo as not a phone, then make it a little bigger, you know, make it something you could actually get work done on. So we'll see. But yeah, I don't think they're done with this kind of thing. Oh, and the reason is.
And the reason is?
They've started, or they are potentially, this is a sort of a rumor based on something that someone tweeted about and saw inside of I think it was the Settings app. Yeah, the Settings app on their Surface Duo. Something about a Surface Insider program, right?
And
that makes some sense. You know, test market some features with this audience.
I mean, you have to be, you're already a kind of a devotee if you buy the Duo.
Yeah, right. So you've established yourself as kind of an enthusiast of a thing. And I don't think that thing is just a dual screen. I don't think it's like I'm a fan of dual screen. Like I've always wanted a dual screen. I think it's like I'm a Microsoft guy.
Yeah.
And I want this thing that I think of it as a Microsoft 365 device. And I think those can take different forms, like I said, but I think this is a good idea. So yeah, I think there'll be more. And there'll be new features, and they'll update it. And it's always a little behind, I know, with Android releases and all that, but it seems like they're dedicated to it. So well, I don't see any indications it's going away. You know, during the whole Windows Phone thing, there were all these warning signs like this might not be making it, you know. And I don't really get that vibe.
Still a little bit of a painful wound right here.
Yep. The only thing that makes it less painful now as time goes on is that there were these things that were better on Windows Phone that have gotten better on Android and or iOS. So,
but I'll be honest, the world would be a better place if we didn't have just Android and iOS. If we had Android, iOS, and Windows Phone, it would be all of this about the app stores and everything. It would be, I think that choice would be so much better. We just really don't have a choice at this point. There's just two ecosystems.
The thing they got right from a user experience standpoint that just couldn't have, was never going to succeed, but it was such a great idea for people, was kind of de-emphasize this notion of brands and put everything into more logical containers, these
the tiles.
Kind of panoramic experiences
I loved
they had.
The tiles.
Right? So in other words, instead of thinking like, I want to post a picture online, all right, so I'm going to use the whatever app, and now I got to go find that thing wherever it is on my home screen. You'd think, well, I want to post a picture. I'll go into the photos thing.
Right.
You know? And they had this integrated experience where you could send messages over different messaging services.
Love that. That's right. It was like the people.
All your photos were together.
Yeah. I loved that.
So this required buy-in from all of these services. And so I always use the example of the photos because it's easy. You know, Flickr, Google Photos, wherever you had Facebook, whatever. These companies were never going to buy into this, you know. Facebook did very briefly, and then they realized very easy, you know, quickly, like this isn't good for us. It's not good for the Facebook as a brand. You know,
and that's what's wrong with computing today.
Well, by the way, sort of joking, but that is what's wrong with computing today, because we just talked about how Microsoft is screwing around with the search button, and why would they do that? And you said correctly, it's because they want to, they're trying to figure out a way to get people to click on it more because it's better for them.
Monetize.
And the with Windows Phone, Microsoft had this idea that was better for people, users, but it wasn't better for the brands, and the brands all said no, and that thing withered on the vine because they don't, Facebook doesn't want you to think photos. They want you to think, well, better now, I guess, but the Facebook app is still Facebook, right? They want you to think of the brand. I care about Instagram. I don't care about photos. You know, they want you to think of Instagram. And that is what's wrong with tech, because these things, these companies, services, whatever, they're so powerful. They could kill a platform, you know, which is what they did.
Yep. It's sad. I mean, it's just hopeless that we can't bring it back. But boy, I wish we could. I thought Windows Phone was great. And we need that alternative. But anyway.
What we need today is actual regulation that opens up app stores and kind of fixes this monopoly problem. I guess we'll call it a duopoly problem that we have. Like, we could exist in this world and be fine if these companies weren't so terrible. And they're not going to not be terrible on their own.
No.
You know, they're going to have to be forced to be not terrible.
No.
And I don't see a lot of action happening. The EU is the most likely candidate to make it happen, but they move at the speed of a glacier. You know, it's really slow. So we'll see.
What a world. All right, let's take a little break. Mm-hmm. While we mourn the loss of Windows Phone.
Yet again.
Yet again. I guess that's the, you know, this all started with the Duo. I guess that's really kind of an opportunity. Mm-hmm. The Duo could be, you know, Windows Phone Redux without the problem of not having enough apps because it's Android. And
so that's actually, okay, not to get off on a tangent.
They don't want to do that, I understand.
Well, I think what happened was first of all, you can't remake the mistake I just described, right? So they can't do live tiles with integrated experiences and hubs and things.
Nobody because nobody will go along.
We've already proven that doesn't work, right? So Microsoft comes out with their own skin for Android. Their own home screen replacement, whatever. Now they have Duo. A lot of people are like, I don't understand why this doesn't look like Windows Phone. It's like, guys, it's because Windows Phone failed. So they have a sort of an evolved vision of what they can accomplish in mobile today. And that's what you're seeing now. So it's different because it has to be, right? It can't be the same.
I feel like there are opportunities. It's not just the dual screen, which is a great opportunity. That's a very interesting UI. Somebody in the chat room, Web0951 says Surface 203 with a desktop mode connected to a display, kind of like Samsung's DeX.
Well, kind of like Microsoft's Continuum. They had this, right? Remember when Windows 10 came out with all the universal apps?
Yep.
Those Office apps ran on phone. They were the same apps. And if you connected it to a Miracast display, keyboard, mouse, you ran the same version of the app you would run in Windows. Yep. There was a brief moment in time where this maybe was going to happen, right?
Here's the good news. Elon's going to do it, and he should really have something special for us all, I think.
The Twitter phone.
He did say if Apple doesn't cooperate.
Amazon did a bang up job with phones. Facebook did. I don't see any reason why he can't.
No, I think big opportunity here. And by the way, you'll all get cryptocurrency with your new phone. You get a little Elon token. So that's going to be cool. That's going to be cool.
How much is that worth?
Elon bit.
I guess that changes day to day.
Yeah, right. Hey, let me tell you something that is worthwhile. I want to talk about our fine sponsor, MIMO monitors, and their amazing, wonderful displays, their external displays, and their Unify meeting software. Anybody who's ever had multiple displays will tell you it is a huge productivity boost. MIMO Monitors is the global leader and industry expert in award-winning small format displays. Now, I'm not talking about, you should still do this, dual, 27-inch monitors. That's fine. But MIMO also has 7-inch displays for purpose-built applications. They've got touch screens. They've got tablets that work with your Windows machine. At MIMO, they pride themselves on innovative, high-quality, cutting-edge touchscreen technology ranging from 7 to 21 inches, designed to be inherently flexible to suit your needs and bring your vision to life. But they don't stop there. These displays are beautiful. They're sleek. They're premium. They feel good in your hands. You know, I'm starting to sound like Panos Panay. But it's true. You know, they're intuitive to use. They're easy to deploy. They're designed with durability in mind. They're created with maximum reliability to stand the test of time, even when you're using them 24/7. I mean, you'll see these MIMO monitors everywhere. You know, on trade desks with Google, Sonos uses them, Grainger, John Deere, Hertz. Since there are many, 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 many more big companies, these are very popular. Both the small ones for kind of purpose-built like Unify Meeting and the big ones to give you extended display, multiple monitors. Their monitors are designed with a solutions-focused approach. That's what's really different about this. High-value, small-footprint displays, they're used for things like digital signage. They're used in conference rooms, kiosks, point of sale, education, healthcare, museums use them, love them, outdoors. You see, probably every day, you see multiple MIMO monitors, just don't know it. And the other thing that's great about MIMO is if you don't find the solution you're looking for, reach out to them. They will create a custom solution for you that makes sure to meet your needs. At MIMO, their touchscreens are designed with a human in mind, with a human touch. Customer service is at the forefront. You can't say that about a lot of companies these days. Their U.S.-based customer service team will always make sure that when you give them a call, they will get back to you promptly. They'll deliver a premium customer experience with a goal to exceed your expectations. And of course, and you've heard us talk about it, MIMO does this great software that works hand-in-hand with the MIMO monitors called Unify Meeting. It unifies this whole notion of having, I got Zoom, I got Meet, I got Teams, I don't know which I'm using day-to-day, pushing the buttons with one interface for all three. You solve this whole problem. And they work so well with the MIMO monitors. Just put Unify Meeting in that 7-inch. They come with the MIMO monitors. Put it in the 7-inch. Now you've got a calendar display that's always on. You have a meeting. Touch that meeting. Boom. You're in the right app. Doesn't matter. You don't have to know. It does it automatically with the right interface. It's just a brilliant way to do it. This way you got your meetings. They don't take up any real estate on the screen. You get enhanced convenience. And by the way, if you want, the Zoom or the Teams or the Meet interface will launch on your bigger screen. It's just really great. Try Unify for your team at work or try it for yourself. Unifymeeting.com, U-N-I-F-Y, meeting, M-E-E-T-I-N-G, unifymeeting.com. If you go there right now and enter the code WW50, you'll get 50% off a year's subscription. Or if you like this idea, and I think you should try this, of a little extra monitor, maybe just for meetings or maybe for other things, or maybe just to extend your desktop to make a bigger display and make yourself more productive, use the code WW and get 25% off any of MIMO's displays. That's a limited time offer. You better hurry. Simplify with Unify. Unifymeeting.com. WW50 is the code. Or use the code WW to get 25% off of any MIMO's displays. Unifymeeting.com. Anybody who's used multiple monitors knows that's a big improvement, but just the little one and the big one is such a great idea. I hear a deep sigh from Mr.
Christine
T.
McVie passed away.
I know. That's very sad. And I have a big sigh too. Yeah. The lead singer of Fleetwood Mac, you know her voice.
Oh, yeah.
They play Dreams all the time in the TV commercials now. That's her. I want to be with you every day. 79. I kind of was surprised to see that.
That was older than I thought, yeah.
But anyway, it's not that old. I just want to say.
Sorry.
It's not that old. Yeah, really sad. I know. I feel the same exact way. Really, really sad.
I'm glad we actually got to see them live sometime in the past.
Yeah, I've seen them several times. I saw them at a Comdex. They performed once, and it was great. In fact, Mick Fleetwood, who's the drummer? Is it John McVie or
no? It's Fleetwood. It's the drummer.
John McVie, by the way, Christine McVie's ex. He's the bassist. So Fleetwood Mac is named after their rhythm section. They're the originals.
Yep.
In fact, I used to love Peter Green's Fleetwood Mac.
And they were completely different. Yeah, they're completely different band back in the day.
But the best rhythm section in the business. And I remember Mick Fleetwood at this Comtex concert.
Yeah.
Coming out in a special outfit that was a drum suit.
I love it.
And doing a whole solo of him.
The guy's like 7 feet tall.
He's huge. Looking. Tapping himself.
Yep.
Anyway, I love Fleetwood Mac. I saw their most recent tour with Christine.
I had no idea. Lindsey Buckingham was not with them,
because of whatever.
If you haven't listened to it, the most recent Lindsey Buckingham album is fantastic.
He's great.
Is clearly what would have been Fleetwood Mac songs.
Yeah. Yeah, what's interesting is that Fleetwood Mac changed dramatically when Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham joined. That's when the Rumours era. But there's also this great pre-Rumours era with Christine McVie, and her voice was so beautiful. And you know her voice, so I'm sad. Yeah, I'm very sad.
Yeah, tell me lies, sweet little lies.
Yeah.
Tell me lies, tell me sweet
anyway,
little lies.
Anyway, sorry, I just found out, so.
Yeah, well, it happened kind of while we were doing the show, and I've been... watching the chat room talking about it. Yeah. Mastodon.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And that deserved a great big sigh, I understand. Speaking of sighs, you poor guy, you've been troubleshooting.
Yeah. I had a one a day over the holiday weekend.
Oh, God. This is why I'm quitting the radio show. I don't want to do this anymore.
Well, okay. So it's interesting. On Thanksgiving morning, Brad texted me. Which I know because I got a notification on my watch. So I kind of looked at it and I was like, okay. Now, you can actually answer texts and stuff on the watch, but I went to go get my phone because, you know, I'm old. And it wasn't there. And I thought, well, that's interesting. Because now it's gone, right? I can't see it anymore. And like, man, I could have sworn he texted me. Maybe, you know, I looked in Teams, you know, how else might he have contacted me? So I just texted him back and I said, hey, I don't know what happened to your message, but blah, 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 whatever. Then I realized about 2 hours later, it just popped into my head. This past week, I switched temporarily from the iPhone to the Pixel 7 Pro, which I got over Black Friday. And I didn't turn off iMessage. That's why that happened. I have an Apple Watch, right? The fact that the text message appeared on my Apple Watch should have been the clue.
It's all about do not disturb.
Yeah.
And focus.
So, yeah. Back in the day, this used to be very hard. Now you can go to a website that Apple has. You can, they send you a code. It turns off iMessage. Okay, cool. So I fixed that. So Friday, I had a call with a friend and he's like, hey, can you talk to him? I'm like, yeah. He's like, what time is good? I'm like, whatever time. And so the time came and, I'm upstairs and I could hear my iPad ringing down in the kitchen. And I'm like, wait a minute. This call's coming in on my Pixel. Why is it on my iPad? Same problem.
Every time I rings.
FaceTime. It's FaceTime, iCloud integration, right? So turn that. That was easy enough. That's fine. But then on Monday, my daughter flew home Sunday. And she had test marketed this idea about getting an iPad for Christmas. And we told her that was not happening. And then Sunday night, she texted me and she says, hey, my computer doesn't work now. I'm like, wow, that's a fascinating coincidence. I said, why don't you... turn it off and make sure it's powered down, and then we'll look at it in the morning and we'll figure out what's up, you know? And I was thinking, hey, she's angling to get an iPad. This is what it is. She's going to say the computer's dead. Now she has to get an iPad, right? So actually that Monday morning it was worse. Like now even the keyboard wouldn't light up. Before this, it was just the screen. And so I finally said, look, she could rent a MacBook Air from school for nothing until the semester ends, and I'll figure that out when she gets at home. So that one is still kind of unresolved. But then my brother-in-law, with the Fire TV stick, actually this was on Saturday, he texted me and he says, hey, my computer won't start up its blue screening. And I'm like, all right, what's going on? So I'm like, bring it over. So he actually had a blue screen I've never seen before. It said registry error. That was the code. You usually get like a stop code and it's like numbers and letters. This just said registry error. And I'm like, I've never seen that before. So I said, you're going to have to leave it here. The thing is, like, if you want me to try to get your data off of it and back it up just in case we have to wipe it out, I'm going to have to get into your account. Are you comfortable with that? And he's like, yeah, I don't care, you know. And so I booted into the Windows recovery environment, went to the command. I did like the stuff you do, like the startup stuff, you try to fix the startup thing. It never does anything, blah, 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 whatever. But I had to type in his password. So I'm like, what's your password? And he's like, I don't have a password. He goes, I don't think I have a password. I'm like, oh, fuck. Seriously. So I just hit enter and it worked. And I'm like, all right, so after we fix this, we're going to discuss the password thing. Like, are you kidding me? So the thing that was interesting about that was I had to use the command line, because you can bring up a command line in the recovery environment, to see if I could get on the drive, which I could, see if I could see the data, which I could, and then back it up to an external drive, which I could. But of course, yeah, I had to Google this because who uses Xcopy in 2022? But this is a way you can actually copy entire directory structures.
Yeah, it's really good.
Right?
Yeah.
You got to know this. This is important. But it's like a muscle memory thing. Like I haven't used this in a long time. So it was actually kind of interesting.
It's amazing that it's still in Windows, actually.
Oh, and it works great.
It's great.
Like it works great. And by the way, you know, as a Linux guy, there is nothing more enjoyable, really. It's funny how old school this is. To see file names flying by in a window like that, I love that. That's how file copy should always be. It's really nice. So I was able to get that done. I was pretty happy with that. I didn't fix the computer yet. He's told me to wait on that one, but this is interesting because I'm just about to write the chapter in the book about the Windows recovery environment.
It's also something extremely satisfying if your brother-in-law is looking over your shoulder. When you say, well, let me just start up the command line here. You type some obscure code, things
start
flying.
And he's like, what the hell are you doing? And it's like, boom, 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 boom. And he's like, whoa.
I'm a hacker. I'm elite.
Yeah. Right. I have no idea what I'm doing, really. But anyway, I can Google, so that works. So this has been kind of a weird thing. But here's the thing. Here's like the long-running one for me is this thing I keep talking about. I have this suspicion, based on testing lots of laptops, that there's something wrong with the 12th gen Intel chipsets. I've been saying this, right? And this laptop that I'm on now is a 12th gen Intel chipset. And I think when it first arrived, I put Brave on it like I put on all my browsers. I had the same problem. I've been using Microsoft Edge, which is another Chromium-based browser, because I have to write about it for the book. I've been having the same problem. And I'm pretty much done on this computer with it. So I'm like, I'm going to go back to Brave. I can't wait to go back to Brave. And you know, the problem's actually worse than Brave, as it turns out. And this is a problem because I do things like this show on this laptop now, or I recorded 3 episodes of Hands on Windows yesterday with Benito. And I want this thing to work, you know? So today, 2 data points here. I've not had this problem on AMD-based laptops, just saying, ever, not once. And today I installed Firefox, and guess what didn't happen? I didn't have the problem I've been having with these other browsers. Firefox, of course, is based on its own rendering engine. And I think it has something to do with Windows not being optimized properly for this 12th gen chipset, right? So today, randomly, in Firefox, of course, because I'm using it now temporarily, I see a story on Neowin that says Linux gets more Intel hybrid optimizations as Microsoft struggles with Windows 11 22H2. I'm like, wait, what? And they have a quote from this guy from Intel back at Intel Architecture Day 2021. They shared the design of this new hybrid architecture. And they said at the time that Windows 11 was optimized in a way to take advantage of this hybrid architecture. And it has a new thread director technology that helps with task scheduling. And then it says, early testing confirmed this was indeed the case. And even its first-gen hybrid products, like Lakefield, this is the earlier thing where they did like a limited test or limited run, benefited as well. So that kind of goes against what I'm saying. But I'm actually thinking, but then it goes on to say how Linux is actually doing a better job of optimizing for this new hybrid architecture. And it says, confirms that Windows 11 has lost its performance lead over time as more and more optimizations land in Linux. It also says the gaming performance issue, remember, we know about that one. And Microsoft apparently just fixed that with this preview update I talked about at the top of the show. So this is the first thing I've ever seen that hints at this thing I've been talking about, where I've been really surprised that no reviewers have had this problem. And I don't mean to disparage everybody who reviews laptops, but I think these people, by and large, rely on benchmarks, where, of course, the Intel thing will do fine. And I don't think they use these things in the real world for a long period of time like I do. And I've had this crazy problem with browsers. And that problem, the way it kind of shows up most frequently is the browser will just hang with certain operations, right? So if I have multiple, I usually don't have that many tabs open, but in some cases, because I'm working on something, multiple tabs, whatever it is, I might have, you know, 15 tabs. We could be recording this show and I have tabs open because I have the tabs open to the stories I'm going to talk about. That's actually a good example. And if I go to close the tab, because we're done with that story, the browser hangs, it turns white, and 30 seconds goes by. And it's a long time when you're doing a live show, you know? And so there was a time, I think Mary Jo was still on the show, where I had to, by the time the show was over, I had like 20, 25 tabs open because I was afraid to close any of them. And I just kept letting them open because that seemed to work fine. But I'll have things like form submissions will do this sometimes. I tried to post an image to Mastodon and that froze. There's been weird issues, but not in Firefox so far. I just installed it like, I think it was yesterday or today. Yes.
So I don't use Brave. I only use Firefox. I don't see.
Right. You're not experiencing this problem, but I think it's something to do with the way it's written. I think it is odd to me. I should mention, I tried Chrome too. I was thinking, what a comeuppance would it be if I had to go back to Chrome after spending the past years bitching and moaning about Chrome and how terrible it was and blah, blah, blah. What if this thing works? And it didn't work. It had exactly the same
interesting
problem.
How about
it's
Edge?
It's Chromium-based browsers.
You think
Edge has the same problem? No, it has the same problem. Yep.
Interesting.
So it's early. I can't say definitively. I just installed this thing. But I did have this thing loaded up with tabs. I waited till you did the ad. I started closing tabs. No problem.
Interesting.
No problem. Huh. Yep. Anyway.
I do like Firefox. I think it's hysterical.
I love Brave, but I got to, yeah. I mean, I need to get, you know, life has to continue here. Like I have to work, you know, I have to get stuff done. So we'll
the
see.
The problem I'm is hoping almost impossible to figure out what's going wrong. I mean, it's just such a complex environment.
Yep. Anyway, it's bad. This is a bad problem. So no one else is talking.
And you think it's the 12th gen Intel?
It is absolutely the 12th. I can load this stuff up on an 11th gen system. No problem at all. In fact, that's what happened in Mexico. I brought two laptops there. When we did the shows from Mexico, I used my old laptop, the one I left there, 11th gen system, because it just works fine. Works fine.
Interesting.
I really think there's something wrong. I think the terms they were using in that NeoWin article with scheduling threads and whatever, I don't think the optimization for this Alder Lake thing, which is the 12th gen. I hope it is. I believe that it is. Yeah. I don't think it's working. I think it's broken. Maybe there have been little improvements over time.
Is this the first one that has efficiency and performance
cores? It's the first mainstream one. So that article references an older gen where it wasn't the mainstream chipset, but they had the first implementation of a hybrid architecture. Yeah, it was basically a test, right? So who would buy such a computer? But they were out there. Now it's everywhere.
Yeah, we all
have. This is the thing I talk about. You know, we went from U and H series to U, P, and H series. We went from U being the mainstream chipset to P being the mainstream chipset, which is brand new. 28-watt, you know, completely different thing. Efficiency and performance cores, you know, like we see on ARM, et cetera, et cetera. This is a different architecture. You know, Windows has been optimized for the core architecture. When did the first, it was the Core Solo and Core Duo chipset.
Core Duo,
when did those come out? That was over,
God,
it was probably 15 years ago, right?
Forever.
Yeah, something like that. Long time ago. So, yeah, it was post, when it came after the Pentium. I don't remember. It was a long time ago. We figured that system out. Windows will run like magic on those. But I don't think it's working on this thing. There's something wrong with it.
I have an H, the i5-12500H. But like I said, I only use Firefox. So
is it tied to a discrete graphics card of some kind? It must be.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a Dell. Yeah. So it's using the Iris.
That's usually why you get that.
Iris.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know. Interesting.
Yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, these things are difficult.
Right.
And it's, you know, it sounds absolutely could be a switching issue or a race condition between two.
I want to write it. I've written about it. So what I want to write is an article that says, like, I solved this. And the truth is, I can't say that because there's so many variables. And
it's
hard to know what's causing it. I have to do it across multiple computers. Yeah. I can't, you know, I have to figure it out. So it's a very hard thing. I might never be able to say it definitively. What I would like to happen is that some month Microsoft ships some random cumulative update that they never explain that it does this. And it actually fixes this problem. And that would be fine, too. I don't care. I just want it to go away. But it's a huge problem. And I'm like I said, I'm blown away. I look for it. I've never seen anyone who reviews laptops say, you know, something's not right here. And it kind of freaks me out because I don't like being – I don't want to be the outlier guy. Like, I'm not a conspiracy theory idiot or whatever. Like, but I'm seeing this thing again and again and again, and it's kind of freaking me out. Anyway, all right, so I have two troubleshooting things related to Mastodon I'd like to ask you about, although I will preface this by saying I solved one of these problems since I wrote the notes.
And I should mention Intel Core came out 16 years ago.
16 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nehalem.
That's right, because it was they bought an Israeli company that designed
this. Yeah. The first two were Merrim and Penryn. I don't remember those at all, but Nehalem, Westmere,
I want to say
Ivy Bridge.
Sandy there was Bridge. A MacBook, like a white MacBook that was used in Intel Core Solo chip, I think.
Yeah, probably.
So this was like a single core, if you can believe that. And then, of course, they settled on dual core for a very long time. And then it went to quad core.
They still call it core, by the way. I'm looking at my system properties on my Windows machine. It's still Intel Core.
Well, because they're trying to maintain a sense of continuation, right?
The name you know and trust.
Yeah, you need to move on. Let's call it Celeron, something we like even better.
Celery. All right, Mastodon advice.
Okay, I am so ready. The one I figured out was notification sounds.
Those are so annoying. Yes, yes.
Yeah, incredibly annoying. So the problem is there's a main settings interface where there's a notifications part to it,
but
and it has
that.
Nothing with sound.
Yeah.
But when you're in notifications, there's a little setting graphic. There, you click on that, it expands, and then you can turn off sounds.
I also noticed, and I think you use this is the advanced web interface, right, with the columns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You might also be curious to know, I use this to follow breaking news because I have a column with breaking news, that in the settings for that, you also can, maybe I can't. I thought I could. That there is also notifications set. Oh, no, I know where it is. It's in the notifications column.
It is a little busy, you know. Like this,
well, if you use the advanced web interface, but that's because you're advanced. This is basically TweetDeck.
Gotcha.
But I like it because you can follow all the hashtags you want. This is the in notifications. This is where all of that stuff goes on, and there are way too many settings in here. But I've turned on everything so that I can see replies. I can see favorites, I could see boosts, you know, you could do all of that.
Notification bang though is it's like
it's torture. Crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so there's a play sound under each of these, which I've turned off as well. I still get sounds. I don't know where it's
yeah,
coming from.
It's
a little annoying. And I apologize because it's bad for the show because
I'm not blaming you. I'm just
No.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know you didn't write it. It was just a question. Anyway, I figured that one out. So,
yes.
But the one I haven't figured out is the interface language is English, but it's British English. Like
is it really?
Favorites with a U.
Oh, yeah. Favorites with a U. Yeah, you're right.
What? How? Okay. Listen, it's time to take the language away from the people that are ruining it. How do we get it into real English, as I will call it? I'm kidding.
I wonder if that's me. I wonder if I've said
there's
it.
There's no U.S. English choice. It's just English. And for some reason, just English is not U.S. English.
He's German, the guy who writes it, Gargron and his team.
Right.
They're European. You're right. There should be American English. But in a way, that's kind of one of the charming things about Mastodon is it's not U.S. centric. So just get over it, Paul.
Paul, you've traveled the world. Act
like it.
That's a really interesting
question. I don't. I know that I have set it to favor English.
Listen, I'm sorry. If I'm being ignorant, I
no, I do this all the time with you.
It's taken.
Paul, how do you get the start menu on the left again? I do this.
Well,
all
I'm
the time
ignorant
with you.
In a broader sense. Like I'm not. I don't mean to be. I'm not trying. I'm trying to make it funny, not real ignorant about English. But I mean. It's just, it's surprising.
It should be
to
a setting.
Yeah.
It should be a setting. And I feel like it is a setting. I know I've seen languages somewhere. This is my personal preferences. Oh, yeah. You're right. English doesn't say American English.
Yeah.
It just says English.
If I see one freaking Celsius thing in here, I'm going to lose it. I can tell you that.
You're going to, man. You're going to.
No, it's okay.
that's interesting. And then this is the other thing. You could filter languages in the public timeline. So part of the problem is for me as a moderator, I don't want to filter. I want to see everything.
Right.
But then if something is in Urdu, I can't understand what they're saying anyway. They could be saying horrific stuff. So,
right. Which is just a pro tip for you guys out there. If you want to screw around with Mastodon,
do it in Urdu.
Use Urdu.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Leo will never know. There is, I believe, in the preview chain of
updates that at some point they're going to put translation, auto translation in, which would be very helpful.
There you go. That's great.
Us administrators. Yeah. And maybe they'll allow you to translate favorite into favorite.
Yeah, lots of extra use in this version of the language, you know?
Why do you, I mean, generally, you just got there, so it's probably unfair to ask
you. Yeah. This is just early. You know, this is just the things I've noticed.
Yeah. I really like it. I feel so. And then when I go back to Twitter to, you know, just check, it just feels weird to me. There's still all of that anger and stuff going on, and I just like the friendliness of Mastodon. We are at twit.social. If you don't have to be on twit.social to follow me or Paul or anybody. You can follow anybody on any Mastodon server from any other Mastodon server. And ours is getting a little, it's starting to push
its seams. I know what's happening. I'm going to use a version of this joke every week now. You're starting to become Big Mastodon.
Big Mastodon. I want to be Big Mastodon. I want to be Little Mastodon.
Yep.
I think we're about 6,000 users right now, which is what I've paid for. At some point, I'm going to have to either pay more or shut the doors. But it's fun. I really like it. And I don't miss Twitter at all, frankly. It'll be interesting to see what happens over there on the other side. But I don't.
Well, maybe they'll get this stuff together.
It's nice not to have a dog in that hunt. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. On we go. Speaking of hunting, let's talk, believe it or not, Paul is if you follow Paul on Instagram, you notice he has music night every week. He and his wife will sit down, they'll listen to an album.
Yeah.
Wow. You're a music fan.
Yeah. I grew up loving music. I don't know this for a fact, but I feel like one of the big differences between my generation and maybe younger generations is that we listened to music, you know, that was current, obviously, but we also listened to music from, you know, the 70s, the 60s, the 50s. And I feel like that's kind of been lost a little bit. Maybe I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But we love music from almost all eras, I would say, or all eras, I guess. As our kids have gotten older, we've found music through them, which is very interesting. My daughter, before she went to college, would be downstairs taking a shower, cranking this music through her Sonos speaker down there. And there was one song I would hear, and I finally went down there and I said, what is that song? You know, and it was like a song by Zayn, who used to be in One Direction.
Oh boy.
Who I used to make fun of because that was my daughter's favorite band at the time. Mm-hmm. And I called them One Dimension.
Mm-hmm.
you know, so I'm not close to new music. I mean, or whatever, but anyway, I was fascinated, like a lot of people, when they Peter Jackson did the Get Back documentary last year.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
This year.
Wow.
Giles Martin, the son of George Martin, remixed yet again. they've been various remixes of the Beatles album, but he remixed Revolver using the technology that Peter Jackson's company created for Get Back, which separates discrete parts of audio into their own tracks, right? So four-track recording was the norm back at that time. That's what they had. And if you needed more than four things going on at once, those things all had to be on one track. And then you could kind of fake multi-track recording by putting four tracks together, adding it as one track to another four-track recording, and, you know, the sound quality goes down, et cetera, et cetera. And they've actually figured out a way to pull out all the discrete voices and instruments, which is astonishing. And in fact, it's actually better than that, because one description I heard was that every part of Ringo Starr's drum is its own track now. So every time you hit a different drum head or whatever, or cymbal or whatever, those are all been pulled out, and they're all discrete, and they're perfect. Like, they sound perfect. It was just one of the best descriptions I've ever heard. I don't know who said this. Said it would be like handing someone a cake, and then an hour later they come back with three eggs, a cup of sugar, a cup of flour, and whatever other ingredients. And they're like, here you go.
Here.
And it's like, that's impossible.
You can remake
it. But they've done it, right?
It is amazing, so, isn't it? And I didn't, by the way, I listened to Revolver before I knew that. And I was just baffled. I thought, wow, this is great.
This sounds so good. Yeah.
Because the way the Beatles worked, they only had a four track, I think. It might have had an eight track,
yeah,
but
that's
I think
right.
they
it
only
four
had
track.
Four tracks.
It was four.
So if they wanted to do more than four tracks, they had to do something called bounce them. So
that's right.
You would record an organ and record, you know, you'd fill three of the four tracks with organ, guitar, and drum. and then you'd bounce it all down to the fourth track. And then that fourth track has the three, but they're all mixed together. And now you have three.
But every time
tracks.
You do that, you lose quality, and you also have machines, echo and bleed through.
Yeah,
and,
but on these machines, you know, these are very high. They're running them at high speed. Yeah, they're good quality. Yeah. So they, yes, you always lose a generation. And
but the problem is to remix that is impossible.
You can't unmix
it. Multiple.
Yes.
Right.
If the cake is baked.
That's exactly right.
So because everything is bounced, they only have access to the last four tracks, you know.
And if they made bad decisions, which they often did with the Beatles, you would have everything kind of tilted to one side and one thing would be over on the right or whatever.
Right.
The best example, I wrote this in the article I wrote about this, but as a big fan of Van Halen, if you go back and listen to their first two albums, Eddie Van Halen is on one side and the rest of the band is on the other side. And it is awful. It's like the most awful mix. And I learned, this is probably obvious if you're into music. I just learned this literally this past month. When you go see a band live, it's mono. And the reason it's mono is it has to sound the same no matter where you're sitting. You can't have Eddie Van Halen only over there at a concert. You have to hear him everywhere, right? I never knew that. But a lot of the Beatles albums suffered from this kind of a problem. So there have been remixed versions of these albums that George Martin and then Giles Martin and now just Giles Martin have worked on. I think they're going to do the whole catalog over this
way. I think they are. It started with the Vegas Cirque du Soleil show,
that's
Love.
That's right, Love. That's right.
Which is the most amazing thing, if you've never seen it.
It's great.
The sound is perfect. Yeah. Of course, it's a wonderful show, but it's all remixed. And you hear the songs as if you've never heard them before. And they're beautiful.
What this is to me is the promise of spatial audio, but realized. Like, spatial audio is kind of hit or miss. And, you know, sometimes you need a special setup or headphones or whatever. But just with like a Sonos system like we have, there's these songs, even in the car, they sound great. But I mean, with like Eleanor Rigby, which is a full orchestra.
Incredible.
You get individual violins going at different, you know, vum, 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 vum. And it's like, oh, my God, it's in space. You can.
In that theater, which is purpose built for Love, there's speakers all around you, including behind in your seat. And so they're able to completely spatialize it, and it's in the round, so everybody gets it. It's an amazing experience.
It's totally worth seeing.
Oh, we've gone back twice now. We loved it. Yeah.
This album, I've listened to this album like repeatedly, and there's all these like, not really outtakes, but like different versions of songs. The one of the most, like the silliest Beatles songs of all time, like Yellow Submarine, began as a sad kind of a dirge song, which John Lennon singing it, by the way. And it's like, in the town where I was born.
It was
no
so
one
weird
cared,
hearing
no
that.
One cared. And it's like,
oh
what
my
is
God,
no,
those alternate this takes.
It wasn't even rumored that this had ever happened. Yeah. Like no one even talked about this.
Yeah.
And I go back and forth with Rubber Soul, but this is possibly their best album.
Oh, like Revolver's best album. When they became the Beatles. They stopped being the four mop tops from Liverpool.
Yeah.
They went from being one dimension to Zane.
they also, this was the point where they knew they weren't going to be touring anymore, right?
Yeah,
so they were like, we're going to make the music we want to make. First of all, we hate touring, but the music we're making is too complicated.
We'll never have to make this live.
For four people to stand on a stage and make it, right? So it's an interesting kind of synthesis of technology, right, which is what we really talk about most of the time here, and music, which I also love, and not just like doing it because we can, but doing it because we want it to be as good as it can be. And this is, you know, this is astonishing. Like, it's astonishing.
Yeah.
It's just awesome. It's awesome. And if you've never listened to this kind of thing, or you don't really know that much about the Beatles, maybe, which, you know, you're human, that's impossible. But do check this thing out. It's, God, it's just so good.
Mind-boggling? The ability that Apple Records has had to force me to buy new copies of those songs multiple times.
The only thing I've bought more often than different versions of Beatle music is different versions of Star Wars movies.
It's unbelievable. 100%. I mean, I bought them when they came out. I bought them.
We literally, in the past year, bought the remixed version of Let It Be.
Oh, yeah?
The new out. You know,
well,
that's
because really, I think we're hitting the 50th anniversary type of things. And we're getting,
I have
all of them. Everyone
going to do that again now, too.
I love them. And it's always wonderful because, you know, I thought after 1970, we were never going to hear new Beatles music. But when you're getting these outtakes, you're hearing it with a fresh ear. You're really hearing something different. You're hearing that's why Get Back is so incredible to watch them. Oh, it's amazing.
Get Back, you know, it's funny. I feel like there are two responses to Get Back. There's the people are sitting there like, man, this is really long. And there are people like
it
me who are like, I could watch this for the rest of my life.
I've rewatched it.
Yeah, I have too. And there, you know, there's more of it, right? Eventually, there's going to be a longer. Yeah, there's more of it.
The technology Peter Jackson came up with, because the film wasn't shot for their dialogue, it was shot for the music. So they never recorded the dialogue. So the technology he used is mind blowing.
Yeah, they pulled it out. Yeah. Well, it's like that scene where John and
in the teapot,
Paul are and they have a microphone and like they're purposely hiding their voices. And they can, because they were, I think George had left temporarily and they're like, what are we going to do? And it's this private conversation, which both camps, Paul's still alive, obviously. And it's this, what it reveals is that these guys loved each other and still cared. And the original Let It Be documentary or whatever it was called, I think it was Let It Be, made it look like this was why the band broke up. Yep. And what you find out is like, no, these guys were totally cohesive, collaborating. He invents Let It Be on the spot. Like, you see it. It's
amazing.
Incredible.
He's just
doodling
around on the piano.
He just sings it. Like, it's like that song in Eleanor Rigby are basically just Paul McCartney. Let's just be honest. And dear God, is there a more talented person on earth?
It's really amazing.
Than this guy? I mean,
but all of them. And even Paul, John at the time was deeply into his heroin addiction. But even you also see that Yoko wasn't the evil witch who split the group up.
In fact, they made a joke about it. Like, he's like, oh, yeah, people are going to say years from now that we broke up because Yoko sat on an amp.
No.
And it's like, and then they all laughed. Like to them, this was nothing.
No, they loved each
other. But that's
the
narrative.
It was just it's an amazing story. And I'm just really gratified that we get more of it because it was amazing then. And there's more.
It's a gift.
It's a gift.
All it is a gift.
Yeah. And you thought you were listening to a Windows podcast, ladies and gentlemen.
This is like I said, vaguely technology based. Go listen to this.
No, I'm with you.
Unbelievable.
I'm actually thrilled that you brought it up. I mentioned it a few times on other shows, but I agree with you 100%. And
awesome.
It is an example of technology and somebody like Peter Jackson who had the money, the will, power to bring this all together and make it happen.
So this will probably change eventually, and I'm sure there'll be other things like this, but he's not giving this to anyone. He's like, you can use it at Apple Studio for the Beatles. Like, before that goes anywhere else, he's like, finish that first.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do them all.
Finish.
But you think about
there are artists like Prince, the Grateful Dead, who have many more hours of recorded music than will ever hear, you know?
Sure.
You know, Prince would sit in his studio and record all night, all the time, and it's all there.
So if you have a good stereo system, there's something interesting about a lot of modern music where it's clearly made for this kind of a system. It just like pumps out of the Sonos. Like, it's amazing. And then you listen to music that you love from the past, and it just feels kind of thin or hollow or, you know, kind of bland.
Yeah.
And you see what they did here and you're like, oh my God,
we could bring it back.
We can fix it, you know,
yeah.
And not change it. I don't mean change it. I don't mean modernize the guitar sound or
anything.
No,
I think
like
that's why it's good. Giles Martin is doing it. I think he has
he's doing it right.
He has a reverence for the original.
He's like the Christopher Tolkien, right? Of this world he's like the child of the guy and carrying forth the tradition and doing the right thing with it. It's amazing.
It's the real dirt that was done to the Beatles isn't this generation. It was Phil Spector and generations contemporaneous with the Beatles. The Beatles would be done with an album, say, we're done with it. We can't do any more. And then these producers would take it and do extreme stereo for the US. They'd ruin it.
Or what's his face?
Phil Spector ruined Let It Be.
Phil Spector ruined Let It Be. Oh my God. So Yeah, like they did the trimmed down version of that, like Let It Be.
Yeah, the Wall of Sound like that. Version that Phil Spector did was not
get rid
anything
of
the Beatles wanted or authorized. And right. I think, as I remember, they were horrified when they heard it. But
I think it's called, what's it called? Let It Be Stripped or Let It Be something. There's a version of it that's just the band.
I think that's probably the next album, right? Or maybe not. Are they doing it chronologically? So if they've done Revolver, they've got to
Well, they started right in the middle, so I don't know what they're going to do. Right, but exactly. I don't know. I mean,
it's really great.
I think he was like, I want to do that. I think he's like, this is my favorite. I'm doing this one first.
It's important historically for the Beatles because it really was the beginning of a new era of their music.
Yeah.
They really became the artists that they were. And so it's important for that reason. Hey, let's just take a quick
Tomorrow Never Knows.
Tomorrow Never Knows. What an amazing song.
Well, because, you know, they did some sitar stuff on Rubber Soul, and then this is where it became fully.
And they used the recording technology and those, the birds, and oh my God. Just amazing.
Awesome. Anyway, I'm sorry, I could go on.
I didn't know you were such a Beatles fan. I love it.
Yeah.
Happy to hear it. Let's take a little break so you and I can shed a little tear for Christine McVie and think about the Beatles. But while we're doing that, I want to talk about our fine sponsor, NordLayer. If you've got a business, NordLayer is a simple thing you can do to increase your company's network security, to safeguard your data dramatically, you know, an order of magnitude. And nowadays, you know, we're under attack. We're under assault. Ransomware. We've got remote work. So we've got employees, you know, trying to connect to the office network and they do it securely. Your business network, if you don't realize it, you should now realize your business network is vulnerable. NordLayer is the answer. NordLayer secures and protects remote workforces and your business data. And it can even ensure security compliance. It's very easy to set up your NordLayer network. 10 minutes. Onboard your whole business with a secure network. And once set up, easy to add new members, create teams. You can have private gateways. You can have IP allow listing. In fact, I'd suggest you do that. So only the people who are allowed in can get in. You got site-to-site connections. You can segment the network. You can, of course, set up secure network access. I want you to go right now to NordLayer, NordLayer, NordLayer.com/twit, and check it out. If you want to sign up, you can get 1 month free when you purchase an annual subscription. So that's a great deal. NordLayer.com/twit. NordLayer is also easy to combine with other security solutions. That's really important. It's hardware free. It's compatible with all major operating systems. You can implement security features across all your teams. It supports two-factor authentication, single sign-on, biometrics if you want, threat block, smart remote access. Scales, too. You can choose a plan that fits your needs today. Scale with your growth. You'll have everything centrally in one place where you can check server usage, monitor connections to your gateway, view the activity log so you can see how much headroom you have. One NordLayer user said, and I quote, "We were looking for an easy way to securely connect a remote workforce to our infrastructure, and this is it. Awesomely quick, friendly, and efficient support got us up and running in no time." Another said, quote, "Simple to install and operate, no funny business, and so fast, our teams don't notice they're using it." That's important too, right? Most modern businesses are already adopting network solutions like SASE and Zero Trust and hybrid work security. NordLayer does that, all of that, and more. Fully buzzword compliant, if that's what you're looking for. Don't leave your business vulnerable. Here's an easy way to add those very important security features. Try NordLayer today. You'll be joining more than 7,000 fully protected organizations. NordLayer. If you want to secure your business network, go to NordLayer.com/twit. Get your first month free with an annual subscription, NordLayer.com/twit. We thank NordLayer for supporting Windows Weekly. You support us when you go to that address, by the way. That's how they know that you saw it here. So please do and get that extra month with your one-year plan. NordLayer.com/twit. Xbox time, Mr. Therott.
Yeah, this is the second light week in a row. I apologize. This has been kind of that time.
Hey, if there's nothing to say, there's nothing to say. Sometime so, we should just do a quick playthrough, you know, of one of your best rounds.
Oh, jeez.
Don't maybe. Tempt me, he says.
Maybe. This week in what Phil Spencer said, although this one's rumored, is that Microsoft has gone to the European Commission and said, look, we will promise to release new Call of Duty on PlayStation for at least 10 years, you know, which interestingly is the offer that Phil Spencer did say they offered Sony and received no reply at all. Right. Which, you know, kind of makes sense because Sony's fighting them publicly and wants this not to happen. It doesn't make sense for Sony to be like, okay, you know, but anyway, so that's the rumor. That makes sense. Look, I've been consistent on this issue. There's been some ups and downs for sure, but I really feel like Microsoft can make the right concessions and make this thing go through without any issues, and it won't hurt them at all, because why on earth would they want to take Call of Duty off of PlayStation, right? The interesting thing about this, though, is that, and this one I'm kind of mixed on, but Microsoft has said publicly many times that this really isn't about Call of Duty. It's about mobile, right? That the one place Microsoft doesn't have much of a position in the gaming world, because they're on PCs, obviously, and they're on Xbox, is or console, is mobile. And Activision has an incredible mobile play. They own a lot of studios that do mobile, like they own King that does the Candy Crush and so forth. So it'd be kind of funny after all this was said and done, Microsoft could just kind of rub its hands and be like, oh, thanks for all the stupid stuff about Call of Duty, and now we're going to take Candy Crush off of all the other platforms or something like that. Not that they would do that, but if you thought it was fun that Candy Crush was
I like that. That's a good name.
Was bundled on Windows 10 when it first came out. It could be coming back because it's going to be owned by Microsoft soon if everything goes well.
Wow.
Yeah, we'll see.
Wow. That's kind of a shocker.
Yeah. Speaking of shockers, the other bit of news is we know what's going to be released to Games with Gold in December. We know earlier this year they switched from 4 games a month to 2 games a month because they ran out of older games that they could bring forward like this. They just used them all up, right? There are none left. So now what we get is 2 Xbox One games each month. I saw an excellent headline. I apologize. I don't remember if it was Gizmodo or one of those sites, but it said something like, Microsoft announces 2 games for Games with Gold, and no, we haven't heard of them either, which I was like, perfect. The 2 games are called Cult Canyon and Bladed Fury. Honestly, Cult Canyon looks like a lot of fun. That looks like a great game. It's kind of a top-down 2D 8-bit looking kind of shooter, or well, not shooter, maybe it's more of an adventure action game or whatever. And you play a cowboy and your partner has been taken hostage or kidnapped, and you go to rescue him from the bandits. But the graphics look awesome. It's a fun, I like this kind of throwback thing. It looks a lot of fun. Bladed Fury, I don't know what that is.
It's got a blade, yeah. And he's furious.
He's furious about he's something. So he's very angry. Upset. It looks like a 2D side fighting game. Yeah. Like a, what do you call those things? Like
it's exactly what I'd expect with a name like that.
Yeah. So that's all I got. Although I technically have a third thing about gaming we'll get to in a moment.
Okay. That means it must be time for the back of the book and Paul's tip of the week.
Yeah, so I've been writing more and more for the book, obviously. The book is about 500 pages now. I've written part of the help and recovery section, which is like recovery drive and reset this PC. In fact, I just recorded episodes about these things for hands-on Windows, which will probably... I don't know how, we're pretty far ahead now, so it might be January before those come out. But I wanted to talk about this because I just mentioned some of those PC-related problems with my daughter and my brother-in-law. And I talked about how I was able to boot into the Windows recovery environment on my brother-in-law's computer and use the command line to, you know, get his data off, which is key. But the next step for this thing, which he's not given me the okay on yet, is to use reset this PC to try to bring this thing back to its original factory state. I feel like in his case, he might actually have a serious disk problem, and it's possible this thing will not be recoverable, but we'll see. I did kind of get into it, not before, I didn't go through with it, but I started the process using the tools that were on the disk, and they did not work. And so I will try it later with like a Windows install disk or a recovery drive or whatever. But, you know, we'll see. But I had also talked through someone I work with, was complaining about his ThinkPad, and he was having lots of problems with performance and everything, and he wanted to wipe it out, and could we do it, and is it easy? And there was a lot of hand-holding. As a smart guy, he just doesn't do this kind of thing a lot. And it occurred to me, you know, I use Reset This PC every single week, and sometimes multiple times per week. I use it on the same computer sometimes multiple times per week, because there's a computer I use for screenshots for the book that I have to wipe out to get it back to a pristine state. And just in talking to people about this kind of thing, it's pretty obvious to me that a lot of people are freaked out by this. They're scared by it. They're worried about the reliability of it. If everything's going to come, you know, become or come back normally, be okay. And I got to say, this thing works great. It's fast. You know, if you're doing it for yourself, 20 minutes, right? That's all it takes. It's very fast. And you can bring it back with your data and your Microsoft account and your installed store apps. You'll have to reinstall desktop apps if you want. There's also an interesting option that used to be part of a separate tool called Fresh Start, which you can still see links to in the Windows Security app in Windows 11, but it doesn't launch the app anymore, that has a unique feature where you buy a computer, say it's from like Dell or Lenovo or HP, whatever, and you're like, I want to reset this thing, but I don't want this stuff to be on it again, right? Like I want the drivers, obviously, but I don't want the utilities. There's actually an option in there for that, and they took that from Fresh Start. So I would just say, you know, buy the book, it's described in there, but, or not. I mean, you know, people watching this podcast don't need it. You can do this. Like this is, I think this is a tool that freaks people out, but it's, I use it, like I said, every week. It works great. It's destructive, but, reliable, I guess would be the way.
Use it on the same machine every week or just different machines?
The same and different. So there's one machine I use for screenshots, most screenshots. I wipe that thing out regularly. I've wiped it out multiple times.
Is that because you want it to be pure when you get the screenshot?
Yeah, it has to go back to original. Yeah. So especially, did I finish? Yeah. So I just wrote a section on accounts. And one of the weird things about accounts is that depending on how you configure them, it changes the way everything's set up. So you can remove things, but I need to go back to the beginning. So I just reset it. And 20 minutes later, there it is. Don't be afraid of it. That's the point.
And then, do you do it when you do it to completely erase the drive, or you save your data?
No, I never save the data personally. I mean, you might want to do that. I never clean the drive. That will make it take an hour or whatever, depending on the size of the drive. The only time I do that is when I review a laptop and I have to send it back to Dell or Lenovo or HP or whatever. I do it then. Or if I own a laptop and I'm going to sell it or give it away to someone else, I will do it then. But if it's just myself, there's no reason to wipe the drive. I mean, it's going to be encrypted when it comes back anyway. Who cares?
Yeah.
Right? So if there's like stray bits on there or something from some previous install, it doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah. Bottom line is don't fear the reset.
Yeah, I think people look at this and they think, wow, this is a really destructive process. Hardcore. I don't know if I want to do this.
Yeah.
You know, people might even just like, I'll just use the Windows install media to blow it away that way. And it's like, okay, I mean, yeah, I guess. But, you know, there's advantages to just using a tool that's built in. It's right there. You don't have to download anything. You don't have to boot it some weird way. It just comes right back to the way it was. It's perfect. Plus, it's up to date. So the problem with install media, unless you just downloaded it, is it gets out of date over time.
Yeah.
Whereas the recovery volume or whatever that's on your drive is updated with the version of the OS that you're on. So if you've kept your system up to date, it's completely up to date.
That's so nice to know. If you have an OEM machine like that HP you're using, you're getting the OEM version
you can also say, yeah, I don't want that. You know,
how would you? So then it would have to download it from Microsoft, right?
No, it just takes out the customizations. You could still do it locally. Yeah.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yes. Yeah, I know. This is kind of an unknown thing.
I didn't want all those OEM customizations, so I would download the media creation tool.
Right.
And all this. I don't have to do that.
You don't have to do that. So the problem is people don't know it exists. And, you know, as it turns out, Leo, your network has this other podcast that describes this in great detail.
Oh, yeah?
It's not out yet, but the episode will be out soon.
It's called Hands on Windows?
I think so.
Oh,
I think
my God.
It sounds
I am going to watch.
Like
so there's, is it in the menu command? Like you do reset this PC and there's a choice that says,
yeah,
don't
there's
use
two choices.
The OEM
it doesn't
version?
Say, so that's the process. So that's the problem with it. So you get a unique choice. So there's two main choices. You're going to refresh it or reset it.
Right.
They don't call it that, but it's keep my files or don't keep my files.
Right.
One is refresh. One is reset. Both of them have a unique capability. When you reset it, the unique capability is it will allow you, if you want to, clean the drive. If you refresh, it's not worded very well. That's the problem.
Okay.
What it means is the unique option is do not come back with all of the OEM stuff. So it does bring the drive. You'll be fine with drivers. You're not going to have stuff that's not, you know, correctly set up with drivers. But it will get rid of all the...
But you then also lose all your personal files.
No, not necessarily, because you're refreshing it. So that's a choice. You can choose to keep the files.
Okay, so that's not the reset command. That's the refresh command.
Refresh, right, right.
Oh,
there's also, I have a book that describes this in great detail.
Thank God, you know, I wish I had that book. I'll have to go to leanpub.com and pick up the field guide to Windows 11.
It turns out you have four ads today, Leo. So I didn't mean to turn it
into
that.
No, this is good. This is good.
But the reason I wanted to bring this up was I feel like people are afraid of this, and... I believe this, I'm pretty positive this debuted with Windows 8. This has been tested over 10 years. It's been solid. It's always worked really well. And if for some reason, by the way, something gets screwed up on your disk and you can run this tool from the Windows recovery environment off of a recovery drive, off of a Windows 11 installation media and still take advantage of all this stuff. So
you're going to hate me.
Mm-hmm.
I am looking at it now. I wish I could show you the screen, but I'm having trouble.
Yep.
Well, I guess I can. Well,
it
says,
sorry.
I've got system. I typed in reset, system recovery. Yep. If you're having problems with your PC, you want to reset it, these recovery options might help. Fix problems without resetting your PC. No, no, we're not talking about that, right?
Where are you looking? What is it? Where is this appearing?
System. Here, I'll show you. I can't do a screenshot, but I can give
so
you.
So what you should do is, well, let me just tell you where to go. Actually, can I just tell you how to get
to the shoulder?
Well, oh, there, that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so
all I did was I hit the start button and typed reset, and then I got this.
There you go.
But I don't see refresh.
You won't. So click the button next to reset this PC.
Okay.
Whatever it says.
It says reset. Keep my files, remove everything.
Keep my files. Those are the two options. Keep my files is refresh.
Ah.
Remove everything is reset. So if you click, go ahead, just go through it. Why not?
Keep my files. Files. Yeah.
Yep.
Because I don't want to lose my files. And then this is the refresh. Oh, and here I could do a cloud download or a local install.
Yeah, but you know, so here's the thing. If your computer is up to date, the cloud download is not more
don't even
up
need to
date.
Do that. Okay.
Don't bother. Save 4 gigabytes. So click local install.
Local reinstall. Okay. Okay.
Now this is the trick. Now here you have to click change settings.
Ah.
Now, that one on the left is the
option. Do not restore pre-installed apps.
It's not worded very well, right? It's not 100% clear what that means. But what that means is your PC maker can customize this image, and this takes those customizations out.
That's the signature PC setting. And then download Windows, that's from the cloud.
This is because utility has existed for 10 years, and that's a...
It just doesn't... Usual. It's historic. Yeah,
It's the second time you get to choose that option.
But. So, again, the best way to do this would be to get hands on Windows. Now, the problem with that... Are we going to make that one public? I don't know yet.
I don't know.
Yeah. I can lobby for that. I have friends in high places. Normally, hands on Windows is available only to members of Club Twit. Because Club Twit's basically paying for it. So they get access to it. Occasionally, we will put, every fourth or fifth one, we'll put it out publicly so people can see what a wonderful job you're doing with that. And so there's two ways you could get it, but they're not free. There's the $2.99 version where you just pay $2.99 a month and you get that show every show. Without ads or anything, because there are no ads. And then that's why it's paid for by the club. And then you could just join the club for $7 a month. You get all the shows ad-free. You get hands-on Macintosh as well as hand-on Windows. You get the Untitled Linux show. You get the Giz Fizz. You get the book club. You get all the stuff that we do. You get access to the Discord, which is always a lot of fun. We were just talking about that earlier. It also helps pay for Mastodon and Discourse. Our forums are open to all and free, but they cost money, and same with our IRC. So it helps pay for those additional things, keeps the lights on. And increasingly, we're having trouble. I'll be honest with you. We're having trouble selling ads because everybody wants all the information about you, our listeners, that we don't want to give them. We don't even know. They want to do a lot of tracking. It's getting harder and harder because of Spotify, frankly, and Amazon, who are glad to give them all that information, iHeart. So the ad market is softening with the recession, but it's also softening because there's a lot of pressure on independent podcasters to stop what we're doing. So we decided the best way to keep going, doing what we're doing, we're gonna keep selling ads as best we can, but also offer devoted listeners, people like you, a way to help support it. And honestly, if everybody who listens to the show paid $7 a month, I wouldn't be doing the show because I'd be living in Haiti or somewhere.
In Haiti?
Not Haiti. It's a little better than that. Guadalupe. But okay. No, seriously, we don't need everybody to pay for it. And we don't expect everybody to pay for it. But we could sustain this network without ads if about 5 to 10% of the audience paid for it. That's all we ask. So if you're one of those people, one in that 5 to 10%, you want to support what we do. twit.tv/clubtwit. $7 a month. There's a yearly plan. Be a great gift. I'm just saying, for the geek in your life. There's also corporate plans if you want to do this as a gift to your staff to keep them up on the tech world. twit.tv/clubtwit. And you do get hands-on Windows, and you would get the full explanation of what all of this is, which I'm going to... It's not. Is it out yet? You think it's not yet done? You did it, but you haven't.
No,
we published.
Just recorded it. Okay. So this is possibly seven good. Weeks out or something.
Good. Yes. Good. Good. Good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, you're that far ahead? Wow.
Yeah. We bang these things
you're
out.
Good. I don't like to say bang them out. I think they're.
No, we have a system. This is a system.
They're thoughtfully
no,
produced.
No, this is great. No, this is. Well, yeah, no, the
with
producing
the
I have nothing to do with.
To make it
listen,
beautiful.
I am the smallest cog in this machine. I have the
no,
the
it's really cool.
Role,
but this is a good example. That's why it's in the club, because it's too new to have an advertising base, and it's expensive. We have a lot of, we have a team that has to do all of this, and that's why the club pays for it. Thank you, club members.
We've settled into a nice kind of a rhythm, I guess.
Oh, I'm excited. I love it. That's great. Yeah. Okay. All right. So don't be afraid of Reset This PC. And what a surprise, the amp pick of the week. Right,
well, here's the thing. So don't be afraid of Reset This PC. Do be afraid of Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. this game, listen, I've been playing Call of Duty pretty much. I've almost turned it into a career, except I don't get paid for it.
then it's not a career.
Call
it's
of Duty
a hobby.
2. Yeah, exactly. This game is hard. And so I did this math with Brad today, but I confronted this to myself over the weekend. Like the central goal in Call of Duty as a player online is your kill death ratio, which is a terrible term, but you want to kill more than you're killed, right? We talked about this. It's the basics. I don't care about wins or losses or anything like that. I just KD. And I don't know this for a fact, but if you were to go back and look at my previous, you know, five, whatever, you know, titles. I was probably like 1.5-ish, you know, 1.4, 1.6, somewhere there on the KD ratio, meaning for every time I died, I killed other people 1.4, 1.5, whatever it was. And that's fine. It's you want that number to be positive, right? So the problem was when this game launched, they didn't have the hardcore mode that I play. It was only standard game modes, which is harder in a way for me because I'm used to shoot, move, and you know the guy's dead. I move on, and when you do that in standard mode, you shoot. He gets hit once. He knows you did something. He turns around and he kills you because you have to shoot a lot, right? So the other problem was
I heard a footstep. Yeah,
is there something? What's hitting me in the back? Oh, it's you.
I hear a round whizzing by my ear. Yes.
Yep. So during that first whatever week process, there was no way to see what your KD was, right? And so when they released season one, which for me was like a week or two, probably 2 weeks after I started because I was away when the game came out, I finally got to see what it was. And on day one, it was 0.99. I was dying slightly more than I was killing, which made sense because it was, you know, for me, it was just an unfamiliar game mode. And then I started playing Hardline, which now is called Tier 1. And Tier 1 is a harder Hardline than Hardline was. Like, there's less information than ever before. And I think some of it is related to, you know, non-toxicity. They don't want to show you that other people on your team are doing poorly. But they don't, you don't never know when anything, like, you could get shot in the back and have no idea who did it to you, whether it's on the other team or not. Like, I'll turn an entire afternoon into chasing this one guy around if I can. But now I can't because I have no idea that who does anything. And so it's hard. Anyway, I have struggled to get this thing above 1.0. I got it up to 1.0. It's at 1.0.
Which means you're killed 1.0. Exactly as many times as you die. Oh, no,
yeah, so my son,
that makes no sense. You kill as many times as you've been killed.
Okay, here's the thing. This is the math thing I was talking about. This is the statistical anomaly that is Call of Duty.
Yeah.
It's impossible that I have killed people as much as I've been killed. The numbers have to be off by some amount, right? So my son comes home for Thanksgiving and I said, "Mark, I'm having this problem with Call of Duty." Like, you know, blah, blah, we're talking about different things. And I said, the problem is there's no screen like on every other game in the series where you can see like you've killed, you know, 500 people and you've been killed 501 times. And then he said, no, there is, that screen exists. I'm like, really? I'm like, where is it? And then we went to the screen where the basic stat is. And it turns out there's this thing you click below.
Oh,
and then
trust it the kid up, to figure that out. All right. Yep.
Right. So what I discovered was at that time, I was approximately like 35 kills down, which is a lot of kills. Sounds like a lot of kills. But this is where the math comes in. Here's the problem. Like, let's say I want to raise my KD. I'm at 1.00. What would it take to go to 1.01? It depends on how many kills you have or how many kills you have totally, right? If you have 8,000 kills, that means you have to kill 80 more people than your kill
to go up 0.1.
Just to go up 1%.
Right.
I don't know if I'm ever going to do that. Like, that's crazy. I go up and down in like a kind of a 50-point range. I don't know if I'm ever going to get to 1.01.
Do they publish like the super great players, what their KD is?
So previous games did. That was one of the big things in the Modern Warfare, you know, the original trilogy.
Oh, I see. I don't see any rankings. Oh.
I don't. Maybe, listen, that could be there. I'm not actually super concerned with where I rank because it's not going to be anywhere special, but...
But I'd be curious, like, what is somebody who's really good at this?
Yeah.
What do they have? Do they have a...
So I will just say, like, listen, I just claimed that I was roughly 1.5 back in the day. What I'm telling you right now is I will never be 1.5. I can never get there. I'll be lucky to get to 1.01. Like, I would have to get 4,000 kills without being killed once. To get to 1.5. I can't do it.
Oh, yeah.
I don't
They should do it this month or this week so that you start fresh every time period. That would be smart.
Plus, I'm not going to play at the... I mean, I played a lot right up front because, you know, it just came out. That's going to...
But I would say most people, unless they come into the world ready to shoot, most people are going to have that upside down thing because when you first play, I would die all the time. I wouldn't get anybody.
Actually, and that's kind of the point. Like, this is a hard game. So, when I look at the score at the end of each game, it's most people are actually under that. their kill death ratio for the game was 0.69, 0.8, whatever. Whatever it is.
Yeah.
I always look. I have games where I'm like, okay, that one went. I'm like, I did well. That's good. I picked up a couple points, and then I see my final score, and it's like 17-23. And you're like, come on, like it's a hard game.
It's hard, but you want it that way. I just read a thing about why hard games. Look at Elden Ring, you know, which is the hardest game. You know, that series is the hardest game ever. That sometimes people want that.
I would like something in the middle, you know, what I really want is what Hardline used to be, what it was in previous games. I don't know why they took this game, which I think a lot of people found intimidating, and they made it harder. It's really strange to me. Like, that's not the direction I would have gone with this if it was my choice. But anyway, that's what they did.
That's what they did.
Yeah. You know what? Play one of those games with gold titles I mentioned earlier. That's going to be fun, you know? This uh, This Call of Duty thing, let it go. it's too late. Don't even think about it. Don't buy it on sale. Don't do it. It's just, if you haven't been doing this all along, you'll never figure it out now. I can barely figure it out. I've been playing the damn thing for 15 years. You know,
I'm going to pass along a breaking news story that we will be covering, I'm sure, on maybe tomorrow on Tech News Weekly or on Sunday on Twit. But there has been another LastPass breach, according to Michael Kahn, writing at PC Magazine. This time, customer data is affected. The hacker, according to LastPass, used information obtained in the August breach to gain, this is LastPass, quote, certain elements of our customers' information. What data was stolen remains unclear, but LastPass says customer passwords should remain safe because the company doesn't store information on the master password customers use. So your data is still encrypted, but something to pay attention to. Since I know a lot of you, our audience, because LastPass was for so long a sponsor on our shows, use LastPass. We still use it the Enterprise version here. So passing that along, it's hard to tell what the severity is, but this is just breaking now from PC Magazine.
Hmm. Oh, well.
Thank you, Mr. Paul Thurrott.
Thank you.
For a greater than ever Windows Weekly.
This was what I call making lemonade. You know,
it's also longer than ever. We're 2 hours and 40, 40 minutes. That's good. Sure. I like it. Keep up the good work. See? See? We don't need any news to talk. Paul Thurrott is at Thurrott.com, Thurrott.com. And definitely you're going to want to join the premium Paul Thurrott stuff because you're publishing really good stuff. In fact, that whole Revolver discussion was under the premium tier. So well worth subscribing. I do. Paul's newest book is The Field Guide to Windows 11, but here's some really good news. It includes The Field Guide to Windows 10, so you get two books in one when you go to leanpub.com and pay what you wish. I suggest paying the most possible. That way,
sorry to interrupt, but people have been pretty good about that.
I bet they have. I think that's a good system.
I have actually paid it. Yeah, it's nice. I get the emails sometimes, you know, someone bought the book and it's like, man, you didn't have to spend that much, but it's nice.
No, they care and they appreciate it. And it's a very valuable book to have. So go to leanpub.com and get it. We do Windows Weekly every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1900 UTC. Please stop by. Watch us do it live if you want, live.twit.tv. People chat when they're watching live at irc.twit.tv. There's always good conversations going on there. Or in our Discord, if you're a member of Club Twit. And now I have to say we're starting to get people talking in the Mastodon as well about the show, which is fantastic. Yeah. That's twit.social, but don't tell anybody. It's a secret. Just for you. Okay. Just for you.
We've talked about it a lot.
I know, and I'm regretting that. No, it's good. But we're hitting the limit now. It's going to cost me even more, I think, to beef it up. Well, so far it's not slowing down, so I'm hopeful.
What is that?
I don't know. Lisa just popped her head in and started playing music. Is that because of the good news you just received, Lisa? She's dancing around. I think she's doing the money dance.
Oh, okay.
That's good.
That wasn't just Rick Astley, was it?
She did. She Rickrolled us. Yeah.
Okay.
Boy, you recognize that song in one note. I'm impressed. Like I'm impressed. After the fact, all the shows are available on the website, twit.tv. In this case, it's twit.tv/dubdub for Windows Weekly. There's a YouTube channel dedicated to Windows Weekly. That's a great way to share clips with friends and family. And of course, the best way to get it is to subscribe in your favorite podcast catcher. People use Pocket Casts, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all kinds. Please go ahead. Actually, Pocket Casts just, as many do, Spotify does this too, had like their year. Here's your year-end listening.
I got that.
A lot of people said Windows Weekly was number one on that chart. So thank you.
I've gotten a few messages about that.
Thank you. Thanks, Paul. Have a great week. See you in December for week A of Windows Weekly.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Bye-bye.
If you are looking for a midweek update on the week's tech news, I got to tell you, you got to check out Tech News Weekly. See, it's all kind of built in there with the title. You get to learn about the news in tech that matters. Every Thursday, Jason Howell and I talk to the people making and breaking the tech news, get their insights and their interesting stories. It's a great show to check out. twit.tv/TNW.